This is HBR episode 2515 entitled HBR 2017 New Year's Eve Show Part 2. It is hosted by various hosts and is about 169 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Part 2 of the 6th Annual HBR New Year Show.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Can you put a lithium-ion battery into regular battery recycling, guys?
Just try it. Just try it and see what happens.
As far as I know, yes, Ken. I've taken all kinds of batteries to my battery recycler, and I've never gotten told by them that one or the other was disallowed. And there is a person there, so yeah. Although I never asked. I mean, I didn't like ask, but I showed them the batteries and they were fine with whatever I brought.
Cool. Thank you. But I'll check anyway.
Yeah, you should check and then you can
do a show
on it.
Done in the first place.
Mic check.
No, I've just done the show. The show will consist of you can/cannot bring batteries to the thingy in the Netherlands, in my specific region, in my specific town.
Yeah, not that's very true. Yeah, that's a good guys. Point. Yeah.
I've heard in Colorado that the bins will like fine you. They're like automatic bins there that will be able to detect what kind of thing that you put in which bin, and then you'll get a fine automatically. So I've heard.
How do they identify you? Retina scans?
This is all secondhand.
Big Brother, they're always watching.
Through the bins.
And the smart bugs.
And the smart bugs.
You have this thing here where you could put your plastic and your tins and stuff into the regular bin, and they had it. Then they ran a pilot to see whether if they had a separate bin for plastics and tins and stuff, it was actually less efficient to do it. But they still did it because they wanted to make people aware of all the plastic and packaging that they use. So that's the thing.
So tabs versus spaces?
No, it's more
spaces.
Like
spaces.
When you go to the
tabs.
No tabs. Spaces.
Tabs on the side.
Okay, what's the give me the argument the pro? What is the pro tab argument?
It's easier.
It's less fewer bikes. Keystrokes. I mean, legitimately, it's just fewer keystrokes to indent enough of your code.
I disagree. You set up your editor that the tab puts in 4 keystrokes. Space. Press the tab key. It's 4 spaces. Job done.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Okay, so with an argument like that, I don't have one, but I've used tab for so long, and I kind of see that as cheating, honestly.
It just seems like the tab is using a unique symbol or a thing, you know, entity for something that already exists, and I don't see I don't see why we do that. Like, I can see hitting the tab key for 4 spaces, but I don't see using a tab instead of 4 spaces because 4 spaces exists. So why are we why do we have we're duplicating entities?
AutoScript.
What is AutoScript? Is that a term or a thing?
This is early data compression.
Oh, okay.
Why should you do one thing over and over and over and over when you can just do it once? If there's already a pre-built, I mean, it's in the standard keyboard, I would believe.
It's not that. It's why the duplication. I mean, because you're saying why would you hit the key 4 times instead of hitting a key once? But Ken has solved that now. So why is there still a tab character in our ASCII set or whatever. Like, why does that exist? Why don't we just all use space characters instead of tab characters?
Because if you tab in a Word document, for example, I would go ballistic if people were using spaces for variable fonts. Whereas you can put in a tab and you can go left indent and right indent, and then you change your font and your positioning remains the same.
Good point.
So, but for code, the problem with code is the reason to use spaces over tabs, which is the traditional argument, VI, Emacs type thing, is that tabs will get messed up when you go from one system to the next, whereas spaces tend to be uniform to the font, non-proportional font, fixed width font that people tend to use. So spaces tend to be preserved, whereas tabs don't. That's it. That's the reason. Only in code.
Good answer.
Not in documents.
And I haven't run into that in years. Of course, I'm also the guy that uses Vi too, so.
I hadn't run into it ever, and then at my old job, I had sent someone a Python file, and he was complaining that I'd used, you know, one or not the and not the other, and it was the first time I'd ever run into it, and I think it's the last time I've ever run into it, but it was such a weird issue to run into, and I just thought, well, why is anyone using tab at all? Like, it never occurred to me.
It's been on the
interoperation. That's why.
It's part of the typewriter too. I think that's also a big part of it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it, like you said, it's there. It's on the keyboard. It's standard on the keyboard. So why wouldn't people use it?
And I think another thing can be for people, if you're looking, say, if you're not AFK, then maybe your vision starts to blur and it might be easier to denote a tab rather than three or four space, you know?
Yeah.
If you're getting down to, you know, oh, I'm using a space for and then two spaces for this and three spaces, if you're... Yeah. All right.
I'm just seeing how Bitcoin's doing this morning.
How deep are you into the Bitcoin?
So I invested $200 when it was down at $2,000.
Nice.
And then I also invested like $300 in Hashflare, and that has already returned on my investment. So I've made a small amount, not a ton, but I've made a small amount. I sold some when it was at 20,000. So we made our money back and then some.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, it was good for WikiLeaks too, since Visa and MasterCard, being the good corporate nation states that they are, they when they cut off funds, people could only donate with Bitcoin. So now WikiLeaks say, oh.
Like, I was more interested in Bitcoin when it was an alternative currency than I am interested in it now that it is sort of an investment for real life money. Just mainstream, though. It's that I don't want to bother with the real money. Like, I want there to be a currency that we can use online that has meaning for us online, but that is external of the stuff that you make when you go to your day job. And I understand
so Doggo
that that's,
coin.
Maybe. What is that? Tell me more. I'm interested.
I haven't heard it announced. I don't know how it's
I thought it was Doggo coin. You're
probably right. Sorry, go ahead.
Doggy coin.
Doggy coin.
It's Doggy coin. It's essentially just a decentralized peer-to-peer currency that enables you to send money easy online, but it has no basis in actual, although people are buying it just like Bitcoin did.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, like, eventually, if it can be, if you know, you can't divorce it from real world money because people will, you can't control what they're going to do. if I sell you my dog e coin, then that's just happened. There's a market there now.
Yeah, and that's, I don't think you're ever going to find any currency that's exempt from that because.
Yeah, no, you're right, I'm sure.
I mean, people do this with government or other countries' money as well. Like, oh, let me buy Taiwanese
dudes
money.
Can somebody else please press record, because I'm the only one recording the stream. My laptop crashes. It's gone.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
Sorry to interrupt you there. But I just
no worries.
Thanks, Casper.
I'll set mine up and just leave myself in here when I leave.
We're just going to offload it to a different galaxy anyway.
Can always ask the CIA for a copy afterwards.
Well, that's what Amazon's there for, right?
I'm assuming a down mix is okay, correct, Ken?
Yeah, once you get to this, you can't be dealing with FLAC files. Analogous fine. I'm also recording the stream, but if anything happens to that, it's best to have some other copy somewhere else.
There we go.
We can always file an FOIA request.
FOIA, Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah.
That wouldn't go over too well in the States. You're being un-American.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, now we have to mark this as explicit.
We already did a long time ago.
Okay.
2 minutes in, we were done with that.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Got it out of the way early. It's good.
Yeah.
Set the precedence.
You're now 4 hours and 36 minutes into Hacker Public Radio live streaming. We have Josh, an honest host, a very honest host, host with the most, some would say, here with us.
Isn't Beetlejuice the host with the most, though?
Right.
I need to see that movie again. It's been years.
Michael Keaton, some would say, is the real Batman.
They also might say he's Mr. Mom.
Wow.
Or there could be duplicate versions of him. Who knows?
This is true. That would explain why there's a Birdman and a Vulture.
We have some serious Michael Keaton fans on the line right now, folks. This is exciting. Didn't know there were people who followed him that closely.
Don't really have to follow him closely. I mean, he does a fair amount of movies. I think it just shows how old I'm getting.
The Mr. Mom reference was pretty good. That was really drawing from a wealth of knowledge.
I think it's just hitting a certain alien generation point, I think.
I actually watched the original Batman or whatever, the Michael Keaton Batman, and it was actually not a very good movie, like the one with Batman and Joker. It's not a bad movie. It's just it's slow. It's like really pretty slow.
It's campy. It was intended to be campy at the time. Because, I mean, before that, you had Adam West.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever danced with the devil in the Pale Moonlight?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that was so painful to get through that part. Like,
You got to do your Jack Nicholson impression, though, when you say that, though.
This town needs an enema. I can't do it.
No, that wasn't bad, actually.
Be better. We strive to do better. Strive to be honest.
This is actually the second Jack Nicholson reference of the evening, because the early morning, whatever it is, because Easy Rider was mentioned earlier on, and people who know that movie will know that Jack Nicholson started his career in that.
Yes, Apocalypse Now. I'm sorry, I hopped on.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't that right before One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, don't talk. You don't want to talk too much or else Nurse Ratched will come at you.
Yeah, with her ice pick.
Just ice. And just ice. All right, keep it going. Live.
Subscribe to, or is YouTube the devil?
I can't be bothered to watch things still. I mean, like, for a little while I was watching some shows on YouTube, but...
I'm glad I put all those show notes with all those movies that'll never be watched. Yeah.
No, it's just because when I'm working, I can usually listen to something, but I can't actually watch it at the same time, you know? So audio is kind of key for me.
Yeah, I usually will just have the video in the background. If there's something that sounds really cool, then I'll watch it. Film theory and game theory are both ones that I enjoy, and so I'll occasionally watch those, but usually it's just playing in the background and I like listening about different things.
I had not heard of either of those two. Game theory sounds like something I would very much enjoy, though.
It's fun to watch some of the old ones.
That's the thing about YouTube, there's a... Sorry,
go ahead, Ken.
That's the thing about YouTube, you can find a niche for everything.
Yeah, true.
Well, since you're in California, Josh, I would recommend Jimmy Dore.
Jimmy Dore. Let me look him up real quick.
Jimmy Dore Show, broadcasting from San Bernardino. In the belly of the beast, you've got Lee Camp, but he's on RT, so that's Russia. Mm. Even though he's American, and his name is Lee after Lee Harvey Oswald. No, not Lee. General Lee South.
Yeah, I know. There are a ton of people named after him.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, he didn't even know. Yes. It's like all the good, honest broadcasters end up on RT because if you speak against the corporation, they'll kick you off. But as happened with Ed Schultz, he was on, I think, MSNBC, and then he talked about TPP and they kicked him off. Phil Donahue was against the Iraq War, even though he was the highest rated show at the time, kicked him off. You know, you get all these people, and if they're good, I mean, even if they're making money, if it's speaking against the agenda of our benevolent overlords, they'll get kicked. They even paid Jesse Ventura had a show lined up with, I think, MSNBC, all ready to go, and then they found out he was anti-war, so they paid him $1 million just to, like, walk away. So, yeah,
it's good. That's money to walk away.
Yeah, no joke.
Lee Camp, in one of his shows, he's like, man, he's like, I wish I was that annoying. Like, God, I want to be that annoying. Yeah,
right. The Philip DeFranco show, if you're looking for some feedback on, like, things that you might have missed, I found that one to be a pretty good channel to watch.
What's it called?
Philip DeFranco Show.
I've heard that name. Maybe I'm thinking of an actor with the same name.
Yeah, DeFranco is also one of the guys in...
Not James.
Yeah, no, well... Not...
That's it. Yes, yeah, James Planet of the DeFranco Apes. Yeah.
You're thinking of Philip DeFranco, no relation.
Oh, okay.
He's been around for a while. Philly D is his back behind the scenes channel, but he's a startup business sort of focusing on doing news and things that might slip through the cracks. With him, don't go watch his old stuff. His old stuff is horrible. He used to wear the puka shells, and he was a little bit of a douche.
But shells?
Yeah, the little white necklaces that are made out of shells that people used to wear.
Oh, okay.
I'm guilty as charged. I used to do that in high school.
But you are in California, so you have something, you know.
Yeah,
California does strange people. It's just strange things to do.
But I grew up in Michigan, so.
Oh, then you have no excuse.
No.
You're just trying to fit in.
I was just trying to be cool in high school, and I look back and I'm like, God, I was such a loser.
Yeah, those hemp necklaces didn't wear well either. Got all itchy. Ugh. Why did I put this on? It's so rough on the skin. But then you ate it and you felt better.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's hemp, so you know it's gotta be cool.
No.
I wasn't part of that group. I wasn't the hippies. For the small town I lived in, we had a really interesting mesh of people.
It's funny. I mean, Michigan, I only think of Detroit. I know that there are other places in Michigan, but I have no concept of what the rest of the state is like.
I heard it's like an 8 mile circumference in Michigan.
You're thinking of Mackinac Island.
Yes.
Yeah. I've spent a couple summers there. Gorgeous, gorgeous island. There are no cars, so you will either walk, ride a horse, or ride a bike.
Wow, interesting.
I have a question, Josh.
Shoot.
The Philip DeFranco.
Mm.
What frightens me here, I'm just looking at the YouTube page and kids' attention deficit type stuff.
Oh, he does.
Oh, he's got the guy, he's got the Logan Paul guy on his second video. I don't want to see that.
So he actually talks about why people are like, his thumbnails are a little clickbaity, but that's because that's what works, and he has to employ people. Like, he's got, I want to say, 10 people now under his employ that do editing, that do research, do the whole thing. So they're actually trying to set up a startup news network. So the clickbait icons unfortunately work. So it's one of those things like you either do what works or you don't.
He's also got like probably 5 million bots also working under his employee. No, I'm just kidding. He's got 5.8 million subscribers. So that's a little like, it would be too popular for me to, as you're just playing with, it's like hipster, too hipster. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's a good one to catch things, at least for me, that I might've missed. Especially since I don't have a whole lot of time to sit through multiple news channels trying to sift for the facts.
Okay.
So it's a good one to at least get your attention brought to things. And he covers things all over the place. So it's not just like what's in your mainstream news, but he'll also cover YouTube specific news. He was a guy who called attention to one of the parent exploit channels. Channel was called Daddy 05, and he would prank some of his kids, and one of his kids had a serious issue. I forget what they said it was, but he would get very nervous and start stammering, and they full-blown yelled and screamed and recorded while they did this because they had used ink, like disappearing ink, on the carpet, and the kid's just having a full-blown meltdown, and it just... They were trying to justify, oh, it's not abuse. They want to do this. So he covers more than just your mainstream media stuff. And I like hearing about other things.
But it's almost covering coverage. It's like meta coverage. He's like a YouTube TV guide.
That is kind of YouTube's part of YouTube's market, though, isn't it? Kind of YouTube, the YouTube sort of crowd commenting and interacting about YouTube, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my impression.
And you're not far off from that, but I kind of like that. It's kind of like a feed aggregator for me.
I see. So you don't have to go through YouTube. You can just look at the YouTube TV guide, which is Philip DeFranco.
Sort of, yeah. But it's not just YouTube news. That was just an example. He does stuff that I would have never caught. Like the Keaton Jones, I don't know if you guys heard about that, where the kid got teased and that kind of stuff. I didn't catch any of that. It just completely flew under my radar. And then you start hearing about the other side. So he...
But is one kid getting teased bigger than, you know, earthquake or things?
Oh, I'm not saying it's bigger, but it's nice to hear about other things other than how stupid our president is sometimes.
No, I agree with that, but not that's why I was pointing to Jimmy Dore, because they don't talk about the president. If you were to turn on media, that's all you're gonna, it's like Trump News Network is like, mm-hmm. That's all you're gonna hear about. And people are like, oh my god, I can't believe like they put a truck in front of where he's golfing. Like I'm just thinking, I'm like, they did. He's in the obvious.
Especially out here in California, I get to live those CNN, BBC News, MSNBC. If I need a good laugh, I'll go hit up Fox. Just because
to check out our international, BBC's, they're not bad, but like Al Jazeera are like, if you want to, some people will describe it. If you want to hear news about Russia, you would watch U.S. news. If you want to hear news about U.S., you'd watch RT. You know, if you want to, Al Jazeera is a good middle ground. They cover kind of everything. But
I do. You know. I do frequent Al Jazeera, too. It's just one of the ones I couldn't think of. It's now just turning 7 o'clock for me. So
yeah, I got to drop off here as well. Got some other alien business to attend to here. But maybe I'll be back. Who knows?
Yeah.
Thanks for doing the show notes, by the way.
I did what I could.
It's excellent.
Being honest. Appreciate it. Like Josh.
I appreciate you, Casper.
Well, I'll leave it recording and I'll transmit it to the other galaxy. But thank you guys, and maybe I'll talk to you later. Never know.
Yep. Catch you later.
All right. Peace.
See you next year. Bye. Scanning is boring, guys. Scanning is boring. I think I might have a go at putting this transistor tester together that I bought. Actually, I got from Sid.
Why do you need to test transistors? Is this for the radio stuff?
It's
or just general electronics?
Yeah, it's for... You can put in anything into it, resistors or capacitors, and it'll tell you what value it is. And
oh, I think you said transistors.
No. Yeah, transistor.
Oh, okay.
It's a transistor tester. It started off as a generic thing for testing transistors, and then it'll identify which one it is, and then it can do loads of other stuff as well. So, pretty cool.
Cool.
So, did you guys have a good Christmas?
Yeah, I guess so. Not a bad Christmas. Christmas is so weird. It's just such a weird, weird holiday. You know, the whole switching, you're exchanging gifts. It feels so strange as an adult. Like, as a kid, like, that's the only time you're going to get something new is at Christmas, so it makes sense. Well, maybe your birthday. But as an adult, it's just like, I could have gotten this for myself. What are we doing?
What if your birthday and Christmas are the same day? I have a Hobbit birthday.
Oof. Yeah, mine's coming up here in a few days. So a lot of times as a kid, I got combination gifts.
Yeah, that's the worst. My little sister had that as well.
Now, my family, my sisters, and I decided that we weren't going to exchange gifts for ourselves. We were just going to get one for our grandmother and grandfather and then our parents.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
It wasn't like super expensive ones either. It was just like, here's ones that took us time, not money to do. They really loved those. I took some nice photos of all of us.
Yeah, that sort of thing makes a lot more sense to me. I think it's weird when people feel super obligated to exchange something. And especially now that I've moved across like several oceans where people are sending me stuff from overseas and they pay as much in shipping as they did on the item that they send. You know, it's just like, I could have just gotten this locally. Thank you, right. But let's not do this anymore.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's... I think as an adult, you become more cognizant of the cost of Christmas and what the spirit should be.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you get older, you see the traditions that have been added every time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, man. That is weird stuff.
Keep trying to start that tradition where we watch Die Hard. Never sticks.
Actually, yeah, I hate that. That seems to be... Oh, is that a real thing? Are you kidding?
Oh, no, I try every year to get my family to sit down and watch Die Hard. We made it through about 45
you're not
minutes this
one.
Year.
Oh, that's funny, because that's a thing here in New Zealand, and I thought it was just a weird New Zealand thing, but people actually talk about watching Die Hard at Christmas.
I remember when I was a lad, it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Now it's Die Hard.
I hate that movie so much.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Just needs to die.
We love you.
As a kid, I remember thinking that was a really cool, because it could go in the water or something, right? I thought that was amazing. Or
the
could
car
it fly?
Anything you needed it to do, it could do.
But when I tried to watch it, like as an adult, I mean, I didn't try to sit down, but I saw it on, you know, on someone's TV or whatever, and it was just so stupid. It's like, how did even young me, how did I think this was cool?
Yeah, I have nightmares
from
that
movie. Imagination back there.
Yeah, yeah. Nightmares. That's nightmares about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That's unique.
Again, showing how old I am. Here in the States, there's a channel called USA. And when I was a kid, Gilbert Godfrey hosted Up All Night, and it'd be horror movies.
Oh.
And as a kid, I could not sleep at all. So I ended up watching the first part of some movie where toxic waste got dumped into the school's water supply, and this kid just starts... like morphing, and I thought it was Toxic Avenger, but it wasn't Toxic Avenger. Anyway, movie scared the living daylights out of me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And I fell asleep while watching Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and the two movies kind of meshed in my dreams, and so now I'm just scarred for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's really funny. So technically it's not a nightmare about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but it is a nightmare about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had something similar happen. I was in a place, in a job that I didn't really want to be in for 2 years, and then ended up buying a bottle of vodka and watching Bambi. And then I decided the next morning to print off my CD and get the hell out of that town.
Yeah, that's rough. So Dodd put into chat another topic. He's curious about the thoughts of the hacking community on robots taking our jobs.
I don't think that's a problem. I think we need to come up with better things to do than what if a robot can do it, then I think we've successfully conquered that realm. And the next ideal step is to then, you know, progress. We find something new and better to put our efforts towards. The problem is, I think that the human race just isn't actually interested in that sort of thing. So that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, it's not the replacement of the thing. It's the, you put it on one. Funny thing is, though, I saw a thing about how many people were employed by IBM back in the day versus how many people are employed by the likes of Google. You know, companies with the same net worth at the time, how many people they were employing. And now there are 10% of the people that were employed by General Motors, Ford, IBM, if you compare that with Facebook, Twitter, and whoever. So there's a need for 90% less people, but these people are still around. So that's fine, what you say about replacing people with automation, but then you need to do something else to tackle the social crisis that's going to occur as a result of that, and people being disenfranchised. And we were talking on the community news as well about universal social income. Maybe that is the solution.
And so my take on it is, I'm lazy when it comes to being a sysadmin. If I can script it, I will script it. I don't like having to sit in front of a computer screen for hours doing the same thing. If I can script it, I'll script it. And so that's a little bit like a robot, but where I think we have to worry about it is in, for the states at least, our more rural areas, because you're seeing more automation in cars, in farming, and things like that, so people aren't having to work or can't work because the robot has legitimately taken their job, but they don't know anything else. So now the farm owner or the shop doesn't want to get rid of the robot because they don't have to pay the robot. They may have to pay for maintenance and upkeep, and that's everybody's response to, oh, well, we'll just teach them how to maintain the robots. You don't need the same number of people maintaining those robots. And on top of it...
So there are less jobs, so what do you do?
Exactly. And that becomes another piece of it. Well, computers will, at least not in our lifetime, be to the point where they can go off and troubleshoot issues at the same level a human can. I mean, watch Google's AI, Dodd, try and run. If you watch them try and run, you'll realize we don't have anything to worry about, at least for the next 100 years.
Have you seen the latest ones?
The last ones I saw looked like a man trying to do push-ups in the air while he was running. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that there's plenty to be done on this planet. It's just where people aren't, we're not, I guess it's not marketable for those things to get done, but I think there's plenty of work to go around. We need to figure out a way to make people be okay with doing those things.
Well, I don't think it's even getting them to be okay necessarily. It's some of those jobs aren't available in their area, for starters.
Yeah, that's true.
And then to follow up, say you've got somebody who's been a line worker for the last 30 years. Are they legitimately going to be able to get skilled and proficient enough in a new job versus somebody who's 30 years younger than them starting out doing that same job and will be around for 30, 40 years to do that job? So it's, I think it's on the sense of robots replacing people. I think it should be the business's goal to, okay, this is the path we're going down. We need to start training our people as we're going down this path to ensure that they still have jobs. But businesses don't have that kind of dedication to their employees anymore. And that's kind of sparked the jump ship culture of the millennials. Yeah. Because if a millennial stays at a job for more than 5 to 10 years, that's a long time for them now. And they'll just jump for the fact that they've been at the same place for 5 to 10 years. Previous generations would stay there until they retired.
Yeah, and I think all of that is kind of
mentality. This.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say that I think that that's part of the larger problem is that there's no, there's not really a path there's not a career path. You know, it's just like get a gig, and it's not the people's fault. It's more like a cultural problem, I think. And maybe the solution is, like Josh says, for the businesses to take it upon themselves to make sure that they're grooming their employees for the next big thing. Or maybe it's something that, you know, maybe it's something that businesses shouldn't have to worry about and it should be something else. But I think that's the main problem. I don't think it's the robots' problem.
Well, the robots are coming, so they're robots are automation. I doubt a robot is going to be sitting behind the cab of a truck. The trucks are just going to drive themselves. Eventually, there will be no cabs at all. It'll just be freight containers driving down the road. Yeah. So that's happening. So anybody in those skilled jobs are gone. It's like farriers of days of yore and barrel makers of days of yore. Those jobs are gone. They're not going to be coming back. Sorry, but the problem is, in days of yore, there was a whole, you go from working in agriculture to working in industry. But now the actual number of jobs is shrinking. The number of available paying working positions is diminishing. It's a simple fact. So how do we deal with that? That's the question. And I don't think it's enough to say to businesses, because businesses, it's not their problem. They will hire whoever they need to hire, and they're not required to hire any more or less than that. Yeah?
Yeah, and I agree. That's what I was going to say. If the businesses don't want to take it, because again, we don't have that loyalty to the employee and loyalty to the business, maybe it's something that the community starts doing. We just had a startup here open up shop, and they're doing community-driven education. It's kind of like a physical version of like those online classes that are run by the community.
Like, and those you mean like those online courses are you talking about, or what?
I'm trying to remember the name of the stupid site. It's almost like Duolingo, where you're dealing with somebody on the other end that wants to learn your language.
Oh, okay.
Same kind of concept, except so this company you pay for a class, like, and it's not super expensive, but you get to learn the basics in HTML, and it's run by somebody in the community who already has the skill. And so, I have a skill that I want to teach other people. Like, I can't tell you how many people my age don't know how to change a damn tire. The millennials just, they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to change their brakes. They don't know how to change their oil. I'm on the older end of millennials, but it's just like, come on, guys. Working, woodworking, things like that. There are arts, and like being creative is something a machine won't necessarily be able to pick up. And I see maybe some return to creative aspects, trying to get them to write a novel, trying to things like that. Teaching, that might be where we see some of those jobs returning, because you may not be able to afford the robot plumber that comes to your house.
Or you just may not want to pay for it, because you have better things to do with your money.
This little point of technology in the sense
tech sector,
privacy is going to start mattering.
Kind of, I don't know, kind of disappointed me in a lot of different ways. You know, it was supposed to make things so much better, and it's just kind of, it's not always having that effect, and sometimes it's remarkably that. So, yeah, I think, and people are, I mean, it's not just technology's fault, I don't think. I think a lot of people are being stupid about how they use technology and sort of letting technology take advantage of them. But I think that some backlash against this is probably going to be necessary, because otherwise, Yeah, I don't see this going down a smart path.
That we're going to see some backlash, and you're already seeing some of it when people bring up the fact that Alexa was used to convict somebody of a crime because it was always recording, and Amazon has all these recordings. And it, when people start realizing that these devices that are your smart devices, they're always listening. Your cell phone, if you have voice recognition turned on, it's always listening to you. It's always listening for that keyword. Alexa, Google, hell, the Roomba, they updated their privacy policy for their newer models that have a camera on top. And it actually, their privacy policy, I think, might still have it, but they can go off and sell to other companies the layouts of your house. And while that may not seem a big deal, based on how certain things are laid out, a company could guess where your TV is, even the size of your TV, how frequently you have to clean, things like that. Imagine if Alexa had that information, Amazon had that information. Now they're able to go off and kind of predict what you'd need. Don, I can hope. I mean, I would hope that eventually there'd be enough outcry for privacy over convenience, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't own any sort of smart devices or Internet of Thing devices. Like, I have, well, I guess you could say a smartphone, but I have a phone, laptop, and a PS4. Yeah.
Doesn't the PS4 have a option to use voice activation?
Yeah, it's not turned on, though.
Okay.
I tried it once, and it's not the best, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there going, PlayStation, open YouTube. Then it would go, wait a minute, and just go, bonk, going, I don't know. Now, I would try over and over. And you would think, you know, like, some of the apps, like the hot words, they're automatic, like Bloodborne. If I was like, PlayStation, open Bloodborne, sometimes it would work. Most of the time it didn't. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother with it. It's kind of pointless to sit there and go and yell at my own console when I could just navigate to it with the controller that's already in my hand.
Yeah, Microsoft's done a pretty good job with the Xbox One from what I can see. One of my Aussie friends talks to his Xbox all the time and gets it to do stuff. But PlayStation, I think, is a little behind the buck on that one. Yeah, from the Linux community, I kind of miss the old Linux community, Dodd. We've kind of grown and been more inclusive, and so you've got a lot more people using things like Ubuntu and Mint. Yes, Dodd. Anytime you're using,
you're going to need to read out his.
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to. When he talks to the Xbox, does it go to the MS servers? I'm pretty sure all voice recognition systems that fire off commands like that are going to a server of some sort. I know Alexa does, Google does.
You would have to, unless it was all locally stored, which it isn't. So
yeah,
like the processing of the voice.
I was gonna say it'd be so hard to run that on what the console can do. So yeah, it goes out to a server and then it gets processed using machine learning usually, and it tries to best guess what you're trying to ask it to do, and then it sends those commands back over the internet to your device to then trigger what you've asked if it's something that supports.
I'm remaining officially quiet right now.
Am I misspeaking, Ken?
Nope.
Okay.
You accurately describe how a typical setup might work.
This is interesting.
So Dodd says, the point being that we can't get the tech people to avoid the tracking, how can we ever expect the masses?
Well, I mean, Dodd, I think there is... I like that we're just calling him Dodd now. Dodd is making a generalization. Because not all... I mean, yeah, the tech community, but what is the tech community? I mean, maybe the community that he's following, but not necessarily the same community that I hang out with.
And I think, realistically, it's gotten really difficult to avoid being tracked on things. I mean, I've got an Android phone, and even with all the stuff I turn off, I still am connected on social media platforms because that's how I stay connected with my family. I have to sacrifice some of my privacy to be able to use some of the conveniences of social media, unfortunately.
So basically, everything, I was of the opinion myself that everything was sad and depressing. Hold on one second, I need to copy this. What time are we in?
It's 20 after some hour.
So it's North Korea time, coming up very shortly in 9 minutes.
So it'll be their New Year, even though none of them will ever hear this show.
Right.
Possibly, possibly not. I'll just slap it in here. So there's this piece of legislation that's in effect now in the EU and coming into effect on the 28th of May. 2018. It's called the General Data Protection Regulation, and it sounds quite innocuous. However, it is the most awesome piece of text that I have ever read. How it's even passed is beyond me. It requires everybody to automatically sign in for stuff. It needs to be as easy to sign out of stuff as it is to sign in for stuff. And all information somebody collects about you needs to be made accessible to you in a human or in a machine-readable format, and you can't charge for it. And it has to be, so for example, on Facebook, you would be allowed to export all your information, username, password, but not only that, anything related to the business that's been going on. So it will also show that you are connected to all these people and all their messages. So when you do an export, you get all of that stuff. And the idea is to promote interoperability, so between banks, or if you want to move from one TV provider to another, that you can move all your stuff over one email provider. They need to provide all your information that you have gathered. And at any time, you can opt out. And from that moment on, they're required to not process that information anymore.
Well, that's kind of awesome.
And it gets better. The data that they collect, they are only allowed to collect it and use it for what they have agreed. And the fines are absolutely... Well, I've got a thing about it here. They're not allowed to suddenly decide, okay, well, we've got all this information, I'm going to reuse it again. They have to re-ask your permission if you want to change it. And it's written into the law, when there's breaches... you have to notify them within so many days. You have to have a data protection officer. That data protection officer is to be reporting to the head of the company, paid for by the company, but not responsible to the company. Has to act independently.
Sounds like a bit about TransUnion right there.
You should probably take a moment to welcome Perlist to the chat room.
Hello, everybody. It's Dave Morris. Manifesting.
Oh, hey, Dave.
Hiya. I manifest as Perlist. I don't know why I ever chose that name, but there you go.
I would love to learn Perl.
It's a strange thing. When I was working, there was a guy who was very keen on Perl and was an Emacs devotee and stuff, and he wrote some stuff, and then he left, and I found I had to look after it. And then I really got caught by it. I thought it was fantastic language. And I still do, even though it's not very fashionable anymore. I still think it's really, really cool.
I attended a talk on Perl at a conference. And it made me sort of respect the language a lot. Because all the posts you see nowadays are just like, oh, Perl's so ugly. Perl's so unreadable. It's blah, blah, blah. But yeah, like really hearing someone who liked it talk about it really made me interested in it, and I was going to sit down and learn it, but then I got sort of sidelined by the whole Perl 5 versus Perl 6 thing, and I just never got back to it.
No, it's in an odd state at the moment. I think Perl 5 is still plodding away doing stuff, but you're seeing bits of it, the modules that really make it what it is, gradually falling off the support. You know, there's things I use which are just on the edge of usability because the people that wrote them have sort of wandered off to do other things, you know? And it's suffering a bit from that. And also, as you say, the Perl 6 stuff that I guess, sort of messed things up for Perl 5. I haven't even looked at Perl 6 yet. It looks very scary.
And I can't figure out if it's like, because Perl 6 now, from what I can tell, sort of says, oh, it's not meant to replace Perl 5. So now I'm even more confused, and I can't tell if... Is it going to be a slow migration to Perl 6? Is it never going to migrate to... I don't know.
It's so incredibly different. It's come from the same world as Perl 5. It's been written by people who are Perl 5 devotees, and they've looked at Perl 5 over a long period of time and said, well, we could do this better, or, you know, it really needs work in this sort of area. And they've gone off and created this thing. A lot of them were Haskell users and devotees. So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of thinking from that side of computer science in there as well. It's very, it looks amazing, but it's hell of a thing to get into. I've been to a few talks at FOSDEM about it, and it was, especially the regular expression stuff is just astonishing. But wow, it's like looking at Haskell. It's like looking at alien language as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I'm unique in this sense, or and maybe possibly even misguided. Maybe this isn't a thing, but I feel like when I'm looking at a language and sort of analyzing whether I want to invest my time in learning it, I kind of want to, for lack of a better word, trust the language developers. You know, I kind of want to feel secure that it's going to be a language that will treat me well over the, you know, over the time that I use it. And Python I feel pretty secure with because it seems to go pretty steady, and its changes are fairly slow, and they vet them pretty well. And I just, with Perl, I just felt it was a little bit rocky, you know, like I didn't want to get involved with it if it was going to suddenly switch things around on me later. So yeah, I feel hesitant to get into it.
Yeah, I can understand what it doesn't look good. The whole Perl world does seem to be a little bit strange. Although if you go to the various Perl conferences or things which have Perl presence there, it still seems very, very solid. There's loads and loads of people. I went to FOSDEM the year that I'm blanking on his name, the inventor of Perl was
Larry.
There. Yeah, Larry Wall. Yeah, and the numbers of people that went to all of the Perl track was massive. You know, you really needed to get a seat and stay there for the entire weekend if you wanted to see stuff. I didn't get to see much at all, actually, because of that, the queues outside. But, you know, it showed there was a huge interest in Perl. He was talking about Perl 6. He was announcing Perl 6 at that point. So maybe that was part of it. But it's still incredibly popular.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because yeah, I guess maybe that's my concern, is that I'm getting too bogged down in sort of the not marketing, but like sort of the user facing blurbs, and if I were just to use the language, then I wouldn't actually care, because it would be the thing that I'm using and it would be working for me, and that's really all you need at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's. I think the whole Perl 6 thing did do strange stuff to the community and to the way that the world saw the community, because it looked like, well, it took 15 years or something to get from, well, we're making Perl 6, to it actually being delivered. So people were wondering what the hell is going on, you know, because they tore it down and then rebuilt it several times, I think. So, you know, it doesn't engender a lot of confidence, really, watching that sort of process going on. But yeah, I still use it because I like it, and because I'm probably too old to learn anything else now. I put a bit of Python
Dave,
into.
Please spare us. Thank you.
I won't tell you my age, but still got all my teeth. Well, anyway,
they're on the jar right over there.
That's right. They're right over there in the Steridan. I put a bit of Python into Vim editor the other day. I had a download of stuff, and Vim went nuts. I hadn't realized I'd installed a thing that vets the Python and critiques it. And it just went completely mad over this stuff. It said, no, there shouldn't be two spaces either side of that equals.
Oh my gosh. I
don't want to get into that. Maybe I just switch off the critique thing, I guess. But I was just going, no, I don't want to do this.
Oh, the Python thing, the style thing, the PEP 8, it's just they go crazy with it. And if you do something wrong, they treat it. I mean, they don't. It's not a fatal error, but it you know, they make such a big deal about it. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, just to shut you up, I will conform to the way that you want me to do this. It's really annoying.
Yes,
probably the
and in doing
most
so
annoying
makes
thing
your code
about Python.
And in doing so, makes your code completely readable to somebody else. Something that Perl doesn't always do, Dave.
Well,
not pointing at you, like.
No. It's easy to write the sort of Perl one-liners, which are completely, they're completely passed by. The complexities of it are just too horrible. So yeah, that's where Perl has got that criticism from. I think that people have written incredibly bad code in that sort of way. But when was this about in the 80s or so, there was a thing that happened every year, which was the obfuscated C competition, where people would put together the most obscure bit of C, and there was a prize for how obfuscated it was. So, you know, it just goes to prove that in any language you can write incredibly tangled and obscure stuff. It's you can probably do it easier in Perl, but you know, it's not the language, it's the writer.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those styles of competitions online, and I think they're pretty silly. DoD Dummy was asking if the Python 3 switch, the 2-3 switch, was like the Perl 5-6, and I cannot talk to that DoD Dummy because I don't really know about the switch to Perl 5, from Perl 5-6. I will say that the switch to from 2-3 in Python has actually been quite smooth. It's one of those things that they've really kept really good forward and backward compatibility, so they're basically gradually, at least from what I can tell, they're gradually turning 2 into 3, even though you can still use 2, and there's a bunch of compatibility libraries, and yeah, it's actually been really smooth. I maintain Python 2 and 3 code in separate projects, and it really doesn't, and even switching from 2 to 3, it's, unless you're just dealing with a bunch of code, it's not really that hard. So I don't think it's like the Perl 5-6, only because from what I can tell, 5 and 6 in Perl seem to, it doesn't seem to be very well communicated as to what the intent is. Like, is 5 going to turn into 6, or are they going to actually be separate languages? Because Perl 6 right now is claiming to be a separate language. So I'm going to argue that it's a different thing, the Python versus Perl.
Yeah, they said that in some of the interviews when we're interviewing them. They said it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, that's my understanding anyway. I think it's going to run off in its own direction. There are actually some backported stuff from 6 to 5 that are happening now. So they're modules that do some of the clever stuff that's popped up in Perl 6 back into Perl 5.
So, I mean, that's counterintuitive, though, for them to say, oh, it's a separate language. Because, I mean, the thing that comes after Perl 5, presumably, would need to be numbered 6. So, like, is Perl 5 therefore going to die, and then, you know, like, how can 6 be different than 5? Like, you know, like, it's,
yeah,
it's a sequence. I don't understand.
I know. It's I think they were saying when I the POSDEM that I was at that they really regretted that they had called it Perl 6. It should never have been called that because it's evolved into something which is not Perl. It should be called not Perl or something. But
there you go. That would work. I mean, it would certainly confuse me less. But like I say, maybe I'm just, I could be someone who's overthinking it, and it's just an excuse not to learn Perl, is that I can just say, well, I'm too confused between 5 and 6. I don't know what I should learn, and then I never have to sit down and learn it.
Yeah. John Culp was asking me if I was up for doing a Perl series on HBR at one point. I think he was thinking of using Perl himself, but he decided not to and went off to Python instead. But I did toy with the idea, but it's a big subject, and I doubt whether many people would be that thrilled.
Yeah, I definitely intend to learn some Perl and utilize it. It's something that I've meant to do, but yeah, eventually I'll get around to it.
OK.
keep meaning to learn Ruby, actually, because that looks, that's derivative of Perl. It has a lot of Perl ideas in it.
Oh, but okay, interesting.
I've not really got that far in it yet.
Yeah, it's one of the
things all the time, you know, just a little bit. As a student, I was messing with APL, for example, which is the weirdest thing you've ever come across, but quite fun. But now I just don't seem to want to do that anymore. It's I'm just interested in solving problems rather than learning languages.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Linux distros. You know, like I keep thinking back to when I was first getting into Linux and how exciting it was to switch distros all the time. And now it's just like, I can't be bothered, you know, just Slackware, just forget everything else.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I started off with Red Hat back in the early days, and just sort of gravitated to Debian now, and I'm quite happy to stay there, I think.
Oh, so you've downgraded. Zing! <Yeah. laughs>
I tried to install something on my server. Oh, do you know, I'm having trouble remembering stuff today. It was, CentOS. I tried to put CentOS on my server. Really could not get on with that at all. Could be because it had LVM on the disks already and CentOS didn't like it. But, I didn't have good experience with it.
No, that's weird. LVM seems to be a default on practically everything these days, so you wouldn't think that would interfere. But it could have been anything, I guess.
Maybe because I'd built the LVM under Debian and then tried to put CentOS on it, and it said it just wouldn't recognize that.
Didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And it's quite hard to pull it down again once you've built it. I think you probably need to use the same setup that you built it under. I don't really know. But or blitz the disk some other ways and start again. But, yeah. It's just one of those things like that experience I was talking about with Python, making me think, I don't want to touch this again.
Yeah, totally.
it's like having a bad meal in a restaurant or something. You're never, ever going to go there again. Chinese food or something. It's that sort of illogical response, I guess.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like if there's that window, right, of okay, I'll try this thing, and if it doesn't work for that 30 minutes, then that was the window. And it got passed by. And now you can't be bothered again. That's how it is.
Yeah. I guess it is a huge thing. But.
Yeah, but I've seen, and this journey to Linux things that we've had with people where they're specifically migrating from Windows to Linux, quite often people try Linux for a while, then, this is terrible, and I'm switching back to Windows. And then eventually, when you come back the second time, your mind is more open to the possibilities of it.
Yeah, so, well, I guess, okay, there's not just one window.
I don't know if that means going to a restaurant.
I guess, you know, but there's those openings and those windows of opportunity, and they only open up so often.
Yeah, I think you probably have to be in the right mental state as well.
Absolutely,
have the right drive to do the thing. If there's a problem you want to solve and it's best solved in language X or something, then it's fairly obvious which way to go.
Yeah. Or, you know, you look on Stack Overflow and whatever code snippet comes up, you learn that language.
I find that Perl has spoilt me for a lot of stuff. For example, a year or so back, I was looking at parsing RSS using Ruby. And there's a module, what would you call that, a gem in Ruby that everybody was recommending as using. And it actually samples the RSS, and then it goes down a different branch depending on whether it's got iTunes type, you know, the declarations for iTunes or the various sources of different variants of RSS, and it would choose one and go down that route. So it meant that if you had some of the features of iTunes but it chose the other one, you couldn't get access to them. Why did you design it that way? I actually wrote
That's
to the
really
author
strange.
And said, why did you design it that way? And his attitude was, well, it's the way it is, you know, to like it or leave it. So, whereas in Perl, I've usually found that people make very sensible choices in this sort of stuff. just personal experience, of course, but you know, I like the sort of choices that Perl writers tend to use, and not finding them in Python, not so much. I wouldn't criticize Python so much, but Ruby, certainly that experience was a bad one. Looking at somebody writing stuff for in beautiful soup in Python recently, that looks really, really nice, actually. I must get into that one for certain.
Yeah, beautiful soup I've used at an old job, and I quite liked it. It was quite sensible.
Yeah, it seems to have a lot of really useful features.
That, if I'm not mistaken.
What's that? What'd you say, Ken?
You did a show on Beautiful Soup at one point.
Oh, okay.
At least you recommended it at one stage.
Funny, I don't remember that, but that was probably, I bet you anything, I was probably working on something in Beautiful Soup at the time, at that job that I'm referring to now.
I remember John Coulter mentioning it at some point, but maybe it wasn't a show.
I mean, Beautiful Soup for me, yeah. I mean, if I need to parse XML, I don't really have to parse HTML usually, so it's usually XML. That would be the go-to thing. But a lot of the docbook toolchain actually involves Perl, so that's kind of one of the impetuses that I keep seeing it, and I'm like, I need to learn Perl so I can start sort of really interfacing more with docbook.
That's interesting. Yeah, there's still quite a lot of Perl in the inside things that.
There is.
Yeah, yeah. So it is worth knowing. Well, if you ever need any help or advice, you know where to come.
Careful. I might take you up on that sometime. not tomorrow, but you never know.
No, you'd be happy to. Yeah, I've been writing quite a lot of stuff to parse HBR shows, the HTML or HBR stuff, to put it up onto the Internet Archive. And in doing so, you need to, you know, do the stuff where you load it in, then scan for certain things. So I was actually looking for links so that I could work out whether there were files on the HBR server that I also needed to shift over to the Internet Archive. And doing it in Perl, there's some quite nice tools for doing it, but having looked at Beautiful Soup, they do seem to have come up with a nice design for how you would do that. I must toy with that at some point. Let's have a go at it.
I could comment.
You're free to do so.
With regards to XML, the only tool that is capable of dealing with large XML files is XML Starlet. And regardless of whether it's Perl or Python, I would advise dropping to XML, dropping to the calling OS and running XML Starlet and convert what you need into a delimited text file.
Interesting. I've never heard of this before. Okay. XML
Starlet,
XML Starlet is what you're saying? Yeah?
XML Starlet, yes. It's a command line parser, and it is by far the fastest tool to parse XML. I benchmarked all of Perl's ones and all of Python's ones, and at the end of the day, nothing compares to XML Starlet.
I'm definitely going to check that out. I can't believe I've never heard of this. I mean, like, not because I've heard it so much. I'm just surprised that it has never come up before. But yeah, I'm looking at its SourceForge page now. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Very few people have the use case of having to parse 12 gigabyte XML files.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
Very, very fast. use case. But then once you start using it, you use it for everything. I can now pack out a RSS reader in about 3 seconds using XML Starlet.
It's written in C, I imagine. It'll be written in a compiled language, so it's going to beat your interpreted languages most likely.
It's fast. Yeah, but that's no excuse, Dave, because there's a lot of the modules in both Python and Perl are also written in C, so you would expect those libraries to be exceedingly fast.
I used to process all of the student data at the university I worked at, which was handed to me in XML using Perl. But I used XML Twig, which was a thing that you set triggers so that when you hit a boundary point, you know, then you, so the boundary was a new student. So when you hit one of those, it then parsed the blob that it had just got, the object that it had just got, and then passed it on. So if you can do that, then I'm sure there are equivalents in other languages. So that saves having to load the whole thing.
Yeah, but you still need to parse through, and then you need to do each of those in turn, and that still turns out to be slower.
Mm, okay.
Well, you I have done a lot of stuff with XML Twig.
I know. It was also
extremely... It was also extremely... I can pull up some of the sample code here. I found it just didn't my head in, because sometimes you have elements... your XPath expressions needed to be very precise, and you ended up that it would trigger on one XPath expression, but if somebody had put the elements, an additional element in there that was max occurs equals zero, you know, it was an optional element, and then that would bypass XML trig. So then you have to recode that. So anytime any modifications occurred to the triggers, to the structure of the XML, and this file, of course, changes all the time, then it wouldn't pick it up. Whereas XML Starlet is just, you know, brute force approach. You write your XPath expression, you find the thing that you're looking for, and you dump it out.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you can pull it in as a CVS file or whatever. But sometimes it meant, so if you have recursive elements where you've got within an element, you've got, you know, options that can occur within that element, you sometimes need to go in and gather all those and run that once, and then make your own relational database from the data structures that you have. So you build a table for the occurrences of the recurring thing inside. In our instance, it would be the series. So you would say we did allow multiple series within a show. Then you would need to first look for all the series, pull those out, put those into a series file, and then go back and get the shows and then make a link to them. But that's easy peasy lemon squeezy in either Perl or Python. But trying to get a parser to do that is just a pain. So much of a pain that, you know, forget about it. I'll pull everything out, make my own database representation of what's in the XML at the minute, and then work from there.
Yes. I'm afraid I sort of... quail at the thought of dealing with XML at that level. it's a fairly unpleasant thing to have to work with.
Yeah, when XPath starts to get mentioned, you just know that you're in for a good time.
XPath is, for Unix people, XPath is a phenomenally easy concept to do. You know, you just...
It's
not relative.
Yeah. It's just those exceptions that you're talking about that throws people off.
Yeah, but you go on.
No, go ahead.
I think it's very similar to what you're saying about the documentation on setting up VPNs. They either are typically too simple or they're far too complicated. There's nothing in between. And with XPath, I've found myself that, you know, forget about parents and sisters and siblings and first and last. You're never going to use them. First and last, maybe. Things like sums, doing the complex stuff that XPath can do, there's no cost-benefit analysis for that. Dump it out to a text file and give it to Python or give it to Perl, and you've got either a dictionary or a hash, and then you can plow through it there. Yeah, it becomes then a manageable thing. You're only processing the information that you need. So I think it's trying to be too smart for what it's doing. So just get the information that you need, get it out as quickly as possible. Treat it like a database. So I get these XML files now, I use XML Starlet to parse out the information, and I treat that as a query. So that's how I can sleep at night, guys.
Yes, I can hear the pain in your voice there, Ken. So yeah. Appreciate what you're saying.
Well, you know, you learn all this stuff about XPath, and then you go, oh God, I'm not using any of it. And I know I could solve it with an XSLT translation from one thing to the other. That would be the correct way to do it. But on the other hand, your life, just because you're, you know, sticking to the rules, there's no guarantee that somebody's not going to send you a file that's not exactly to spec. And at the end of the day, you have an option. Are you going to be thick-headed and not have your product sold because you're going to be annoyed about somebody missing an element? Or are you just simply not going to display that image on the screen and carry on with your life. So, yeah, if I was back in the days when I was doing life support ventilators, of course I would stop it. But, you know, when you're talking about displaying information on a TV screen, does it really matter? And that's all I have to say about that. Thought I really ruined the conversation there. Sorry, guys.
Just drop some XML in it and you've done it.
Oh, God, don't get me started.
The strange thing is, though, about XML is that as much as I complain about it, I keep going back to it because it really is really good at what it does. It's just such a thing all the time, whether you're dealing with it or you're parsing it or you're trying to translate it to something else. It's just, I don't know, it's a weird thing. I love it, but it's also very complex.
It's a love-hate relationship. I must say I much prefer JSON because it's so much saner for data transfer. It's so much saner because
there are
only a few things that you can do, and that's it. It's done.
Right, yeah. But at the same time, it's... it can get pretty ugly to look at when it gets complex as well.
Yeah, but you don't have to look at it. Run it through a parser.
Right, yeah, sure, you know,
turn it pretty. JQ, have you used that command line tool, JQ?
No, never. Don't know that one, actually.
JQ and XML Starlet. Definitely. JQ is a command line parser for parsing JSON. It's awesome. You can, like, bash, pipe stuff into it, grab stuff out of it as well. And it does a beautiful job of just tidying it up and putting everything into nice colors, and all the keys are one color and the things are another color. It's fantastic. Cool. And I like the fact that JSON either works or it doesn't work. There's no in between. It's valid or it doesn't. Nothing parses if it doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like in Python for a while I was really liking JSON for some things, but once I really started using Beautiful Soup, I fell back to XML because that's what I do. I keep going back to XML.
Yeah, XML is fine when it's a defined standard that kind of works and it's not insane. And I'm unfortunate in that I'm dealing with two specific insane formats for my daily life.
And does anyone
if you look at RSS, that's not even bad. That makes sense. But it's really down to whoever. You just give somebody the freedom to do anything and then they will develop whatever it is based on their whatever they consider to be logical.
Does anyone have permissions to drag Sebastian into this channel? Apparently he's in the lounge and he's stuck there.
How is that not possible? I'll drag him in.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried to drag him, but I don't think I have permissions for that.
There he is. I'm in.
Welcome, Sebastian.
Now, why is that? There is no reason why.
Yeah, that seems odd.
Let's see. Groups. Everybody can... All groups.
Testing. Can anybody... Can I be heard?
Yeah, we can hear you.
You are being heard right now.
Okay, good. At least the phone works. Did somebody put me in here, though? Because I don't think I
did. Yeah,
yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
But we've had... Well, CM Hobbs is stuck out. Well, hold on one second. Why are people stuck out in the lounge, people?
I've logged in on two separate computers, and I have not had this problem, so I'm not sure what's going on.
I don't know, but I'll have to use my phone this time, it looks like, because I've got caught out a little bit with my headsets. And
Klaatu, do you mind if I make you admin?
I do not mind.
Is there anyone else going to be on for a while? Because I need to go do family stuff shortly.
I will be back in a little bit. I'll be back soon. I just wanted to test that this would actually work first.
Cool. I'm actually leaving as well, Ken. It's like 5 in the morning.
No worries.
I should probably
go to bed.
Get some sleep, but I'm going to keep recording. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I feel like I didn't really organize that very well, so I'm not sure when or if it will happen.
No, go get some sleep.
I may try to just set up something separate, you know, for some other time. I thought it might be cool for the new year thing, but I think the atmosphere here is a bit different, so maybe I'll just do like a thing on the mailing list and invite a bunch of people on for an impromptu game or something some other time.
Yeah, all the thing room is here for that sort of purpose.
Yep. Cool. Everyone have a great New Year's show. I'm going to go sleep some.
Okay, bye, Gladys.
Nice to talk to you. It's great talking to you.
Yep, see ya.
I'm going to try and do some debugging here on the website.
Have you posted the community news yet, Ken?
No, I haven't, Dave. This is my life, guys. Dave hounded me for to do stuff.
Why? No, it's just that I'm going to upload stuff to the archive.org, and I need that before I can... Well, I could do the other
ones. Yes, and that needs to be fast.
To be ready for midnight.
Oh, crikey. Hold
UTC.
On, yeah. Give me a second.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. All right.
Speaking of uploading things, how are we doing on shows?
I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Can somebody ping me if they can't get into the room because I need to post the show stat?
Somebody spoke and we had a collision.
I said I'll be back in about 15 minutes.
Okay.
I believe I talked over a bunch of people as well, sorry.
No problem. How are we doing for shows, did you say?
That's what I was asking. I could probably get a couple of shows recorded if we're running thin. It's been a few months.
We're not too thin, but we need them. Remember, we need them constantly because do five a week. So any contribution would be much appreciated.
I may just try to record a couple then and set them for dates far in the future. That way they could be percolated up if necessary or something.
Yeah, cool. That would be great.
I'm glad I finally got into the server. I don't know if you guys were watching IRC, but I don't have my glasses on and mistyped the thing, and I feel pretty silly about the whole ordeal, but finally here.
No, I didn't. I've not been following the IRC. I was expecting... Is Clacker there in IRC as well? Because he was asking earlier on GNU Social where the chat was happening.
I see his name here, but he hasn't spoken as far as I know.
Okay. I was expecting him on the Mumble. He's a busy guy. Could do with him here for WeChat as well, I think.
Is GNU Social still quite active? I actually bailed several months ago. And
yes, I noticed
really
you were not around very much. Yes, it is. I'm not there a huge lot these days. I was never very active, but I tend not to go on that often. Just occasionally I get messages saying, there's an HBR thing, can you help me? And I go and answer that because I get mail from things when I get notification. So, but other than that, but it's a lot more busy since Mastodon, I think.
Yeah, that's primarily why I left. I couldn't keep up with my timeline. For some reason, the people I was following, I don't know if they were repeating notices from other people more often than they were speaking, but my timeline just became a mess of people I didn't know talking about things I didn't understand. So felt sort of silly being unable to tame my timeline, so I just went ahead and quit.
Yeah, I do know the feeling. I've also got a lot. It's the retweets or whatever the equivalent is that it was flooding my timeline as well. So I tend not to be there that much these days.
Yeah, I certainly didn't want to block a bunch of people because the people that were being repeated had good information or fun things to read, but typically it was just a flood of stuff and it would drown out all of the slower posters that I preferred following. So now I just typically communicate with people on Jabber, it seems like.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? I noticed that as well. I joined GNU Social a couple of years ago. I met some people at FOSDEM who were quite into it, and they suggested, oh, why don't you join? And I did, and there was quite a lot of chat between people on HPR and people I'd met at Old Camp and FOSDEM and this sort of stuff. It's fairly small, you know, as it depends who you follow and stuff, but since then it seems to have blown up to more than my small brain can handle.
Oh, sorry for the pause there. One of my radios was going off. There it goes again. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I was about to disappear there, but well, I still got it on in the background. But yeah, Fosder, Molkamp. Yeah, I know about those.
Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, Sebastian.
Do you remember me?
Do you remember me?
I was sat beside you and I won the laptop at Molkamp.
Oh, it was you. Oh, yes. The guy I jokingly said, if you win the laptop, give it to me, and then he won it.
I never did, sorry.
When they redrawed.
I'll come back and talk to you in a bit.
Can you get a set of headphones as well, please, because you're looping back into the feed.
I might be. Unfortunately, I have to use a phone now because I had headset problems.
Yeah, get earbuds or something. Or mute when you're not talking.
That's the problem. Well, I'm going to have to go. I've got a ton of things I need to do here, but nice to speak to a few people.
Dave, I've just edited the show. I'm uploading it now to Thingy, and I'll transcode it, and I'll send you an email when it's done. Yeah.
Right, that's great.
Sorry for the delay.
No. There's still plenty of time to do it, but it does need to be done because we're now depending on it being there for Monday, aren't we?
Yes, indeed we are.
Okay, catch you later.
Bye.
Take care.
So you're also tuning into some radio stuff, Chris?
Oh, I've always got a radio or two going. That was a repeater that was announcing its ID. And it's exciting for me because nobody's maintaining this repeater anymore. And the time has been inaccurate for quite some time. So when we get back to daylight savings time, the time will go back to being accurate. So I'm just waiting for that day when I hear it announce the correct time.
Yeah. How do you go about getting the... you know, if nobody's maintaining it, who's keeping that in the air?
Well, I don't know. I think it's running itself. It's a repeater that I used to check into regularly back in about 2003 when our local Department of Emergency Management, which is a civilian organization, was just a bunch of volunteers who help out in storms and stuff. We use the repeater greatly, and it still retains that call sign, and that call sign's still valid per the FCC, but I think nobody's touching it. But it's kind of like an old Unix box. It just keeps going and doesn't die, probably because nobody's really using it very much. Yeah, I think it's on a water tower, actually, in a environment-proof box up there. And I think it's still on repeater book, perhaps. I've had access to it for many years, and the only reason I was able to program it into a new radio is I just remembered the frequencies and the PL tones, but I'm sure new people would probably have trouble finding it unless they look it up through repeater book.
Okay. I'm doing a few things here at the same time, so forgive me for that. Trying to find tomorrow's show. No, I still didn't do any more with my license. Well, I'm actually, I want to do a beginner's one, but I'm debating whether to do it here in the Netherlands or do it in England or even do it in Ireland. My three options, whichever is the easiest.
I don't know the differences between the licensing in those countries. You know, if you haven't played with WebSDR.org yet, you may want to do that. I'm sure you've done plenty of receiving.
Yeah, I've done,
but,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But actually, go on. By the way, people, if you think we're all jumping in over each other, it's a feature of the fact this is a global podcast and there's a delay and we don't hear each other the same way that you do. So there you go. Come on ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if you are looking to get rights to transmit, if you just focus on HF, I think that'll get the furthest response available. If you do VHF and UHF, you're going to be dependent on the radio horizon. So whatever license will get you some limited HF privileges would probably be the best place to start. Even if that's not the aspect of the hobby you're most interested in, it will get you the most people to talk to.
Yeah, I still need to I need to get some sort of a license to operate, and it kind of makes sense to get the Dutch one because, hey, it's the Netherlands after all. Because if you get the full license in the UK or Ireland, you can transfer it within the, you can transfer your license over without having to do the exam. I should have actually explained that.
And you may want to look into what call signs are available then, because if there's a call sign prefix you prefer from another country, that might be the route to go.
Yeah, but if you're living over here, then they would expect you to register here locally. So if you're a resident here, but I don't know. I'll see. I think, oh no, what's wrong now?
That's a fair point. Yeah, it seems logical to get it locally, but especially if you can transfer it. I know some people, though, that just often fly to different countries for the sole purpose of getting it licensed in that country, so they have another call sign.
Okay.
So why not do all three?
Nah. I find it hard enough to find the time to do one in the first place. So.
Oh, yeah, I know the feeling.
I'm going to have to edit the database directly. I'm not a happy person at the moment. Let me see.
You having trouble with the uploads?
Well, hold on 1 second. Yeah, what happens is we post the show, and then we need to go back and add the duration to it. So the text-to-speech at the beginning has the right information.
Are you doing the New Year's show, uploading that? Are there multiple
the
New Year's
news
shows?
From yesterday. So we recorded the one
yesterday,
out on Monday, and then presumably Hunky's doing the posting the New Year's show. Although I'm the only one, I was the only one with a recording from this morning, so I don't know, we'd say somebody will post it.
I think I only made one of the community news shows this year, maybe two, I don't recall.
You listened to them or attended it?
Attended it. I listened to just about every HPR episode. The about the only times I don't listen is if the audio... I have really poor headphones for when I'm listening to podcasts, and if the audio is very tinny, I'll typically not listen to it unless the subject is just totally enthralling.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I should probably record a few episodes. It's been several months for me, so if like and Dave said we weren't running thin, but it's good to have some in the backlog, so
absolutely.
I'll see what I can get recorded.
Always makes me feel better when I look at 3 or 4 weeks out that there's at least a show or two in there. 5-6 weeks out, if there's at least one show in there, that cheers me up no end.
Is it possible to record some and just not schedule them and set them aside for reserve, or is that a bad idea? Should they just be scheduled?
Yeah, but I'd prefer if you didn't. We have enough for that, and so just go out, do what JWP does. He schedules 12 shows a year and puts one in every month. So yeah, seems like a good idea.
That's probably smart. I don't know if I've got 12 topics, but I'll come up with something. A few things I'm working on. I'm overhauling my network. We're overhauling some of the Manor network, and then. One thing I thought about, I do part of my work is penetration testing, and I thought it would be fun to record an episode while I was in the middle of course, not reveal any information, but record an episode while I was on site or something like that, sneaking around.
Very. That would definitely fulfill our hacker aspect of our thing. But no, it's penetration testing.
Certainly. I just wonder how much blathering into a headset would blow my cover. But, I could easily make it part of the shtick, so we'll see what happens.
Exactly. Oh, that would be interesting. It would also just an interesting to hear a show about how you got into that and what life is actually like, because I imagine people have very different views on penetration testing and how cool it is and stuff, so...
Yeah, I get asked a lot, like, oh, that sounds so fun, isn't it cool or whatever, and there's probably 10, 15 minutes out of a 4-week audit that's fun. The rest of it is, adrenaline, because we do, boring or adrenaline. We do physical auditing as well, like breaking and entering crap, and there's nothing fun about that.
Yeah, seriously?
It's pretty it's you have to be in shape, and it's terrifying sometimes because I live in an area where people carry firearms regularly, so you never know if you're going to get a gun pointed at you.
You need to do shows about this. Seriously, absolutely need to do shows about this.
Well, I only do about 4 audits a year these days because I'm getting too old to jump fences, I'll put something together. I could do like a little QA or, how to get into it, how to, or what it's like and so on. That would be easily done. it also gives you a different perspective on things. It's kind of funny. I remember one instance in particular, standing outside of a building waiting on someone to move so I could get access to a network port. And I stood outside waiting on that person for about an hour or two, and I had a clear view of them, but they couldn't see me. And now in my living room with my giant windows, we call it the fishbowl, at night sometimes I look outside and wonder who's looking in at me.
No, I've never, here in the Netherlands, is the Calvinistic idea of everybody should be able to look into your windows, and nah, thank you very much. Blackout blinds for me.
Yeah, I'm much the same. I prefer my privacy.
But you have nothing to hide. Yeah.
Oh, I've got plenty to hide. Plenty. Mostly my my cringeworthy moments of roaming around the house and singing to my cats and son and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah.
That was a great episode. I really enjoyed that, the satellite hunting one.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've made a few contacts. I'm trying to get one of the, I guess, achievement awards or whatever you want to call them. They call them awards. But AMSAT provides little pieces of paper that confirms that you've made so many contacts. But my problem is the satellites keep flying over in such a manner that they hit the same grid squares. So I can't get unique contacts. I've made enough to fulfill the award, but they're not in the right places. But perhaps we'll do another one of those satellite episodes that I may be able to actually get a contact on a recording. That would be really cool. I think I can run my radio into my recorder, but I don't know if I can get it to record my voice at the same time. I'll have to experiment a bit.
I'm just looking at the control panel from Mumble, and I cannot see any reason why there would be a problem here.
With people connecting?
Yeah, hold on one second. Confirm that we're at.
Well, my problem is I didn't have my glasses on and I misread the URL. I ended up typing CHI instead of CH1 because I couldn't read it.
So we got 250 slots and there's nothing strange. People should be going to the lounge. Let me check on Mumble itself. And I'm still normalizing the audio over there for the HPR show. Edit the channel, I get Micro Public Radio, groups, all, add. I don't know what I just did, but I just added it all to something, so it can't be that. Yeah, everything looks okay. Access control list, all, deny write access transverse, enter, all can enter, all can speak, all can transverse, all can whisper, and all can text. And there's another all here. Enter. Yep, don't get it. Okay.
Has it passed the new year over there in the Netherlands yet? It's a bit of a dumb question, but I don't know my geography well.
Nah, who can? I think some people can, some people can't. But for that very reason, we have a link on the website, which will point you to timeanddate.com, and there you can follow it down. Currently, the next people to go is much of Indonesia, Thailand, and seven more. 39 minutes to go there. And we have the show notes page as well. If you go to the main link, you can keep notes here button.
The Etherpad. I should be on for a good part of the day, checking in and out here and there. I do have a little bit of work to get done, but otherwise it shouldn't be a problem. And I'll try to make it for midnight my time. That'll depend on what state my wife and I are in. So
very good. I'm going to go spend some time with the family from around shortly now, once I get the show posted.
Fantastic.
Okay. Show's been converted. There's quite a lot of people on. Seems to be less now. We'll deal with that one tomorrow.
Do you know if anybody's done any shows on cryptocurrencies recently?
Oh, way back in the day, I think, when Bitcoin started, yes.
Yeah, I don't remember any in recent memory, but with the explosion over the last few months, I'm surprised nobody's flapped their gums about it.
Yeah, I think everybody here is just waiting for the massive crash that is inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, likewise. I am interested in Ethereum, not as a currency, but as a platform. I like to try and tinker with Solidity and build things on their network, but I'm of the same mind that it's eventually going to collapse.
I do see a future for it, like for digital as a replacement for digital signatures and that sort of thing. So there is a community for verifying the, you know, maintaining honesty, integrity within a community of, I don't know, people who exchange documents, whether it's you know, for your tax authorities, that you have your auditor sign documents that you sent it at this date, and then the tax authority will verify that, you know, that sort of thing. That I see a future.
Most certainly, I could see that as well. I think that people will figure things out to do with it along those lines, and it'll settle down at some point.
Yeah, but you can see that there's going to be a peak now again, then there's going to be a massive crash, then there'll be about 5 to 6 years, and then the more mature bits of the technology will be used.
A lot of people making a whole bunch of money on the way, though, that's for sure. I had a couple of friends retire on it. I was never smart enough to, well, brave enough to put in a bunch of money. So I just left it alone. That would have been a great time to collapse. So looking at this, I think I can do about 4 shows here. I can cover... Don't tell you what, that I can do 4 shows?
Now you owe me shows. If you say it, it's like Beetlejuice.
Oh, no. I certainly plan to do these. I actually tossed them into my agenda here. I could do one on the InfoSec stuff, the pen testing. I could do another one on low-power radio stuff. And then I could do one on the Manor network updates, especially things like Pi-hole and how we do our DNS, because I remembered you asked about a DNS primer, so maybe I could do a DNS primer as well.
Oh, yes.
And then, and then I could do one on some of the technology I take with me when I'm hiking, so that if I end up injured, heaven forbid, or something like that, I can get myself out of the woods. So that's 4 or 5. I'll try and come up with a total of 12 of them, but I'm running thin on ideas.
Can you tell? I got the employee voucher thing. I got one of these fire starter sticks. Have you ever seen them? There's like a piece of metal, and then there's some other piece of metal, like a can opener, and you're supposed to be able to...
Can I what now? You broke up on me. I don't know if that was my network connection or what.
There's a... I got this fire starter stick thing. Did you ever see one of those? It's like a metal piece of metal, and there's another piece of metal, like a can opener, you know, thing with a little map measurement thing. Sorry, terrible description. But I have no idea. It came with no instructions, and yeah, I have no idea how to start a fire using this stick. It's called a MacGyver fire stick.
Is it like one of those magnesium rods, perhaps? Like a ferro rod, rather?
Yeah, it could be. It's black.
Yeah, I think it's a ferro rod. It's not too difficult to start a fire with one of those. But yeah, there's lots of fire starting techniques, and that's probably the most popular these days if you're not using a lighter.
So what's it called, the ferro rod?
Ferro rod, F-E-R-R-O-R-O-D.
Honestly, the easiest way to do it is you scrape some of the magnesium off into a little tiny pile onto whatever you're going to start a fire on, your little bit of kindling. Usually something easy to catch fire, like, I mean, you could use cotton balls as a good starter. Just scrape some on there, and then with whatever steel you're using, make sure it has a good edge on it, and like don't like hit it to strike it, but rather quickly scrape it along one side, and it'll spark, and the little pile there will catch too, and cause a much larger spark, and it'll cause whatever kindling you have it on to catch fire.
Yeah, I get that, but when I hit this thing, nothing happens. Yeah, it is. That's what it is. Yeah, it's a ferro rod. Yeah.
Well, it's more of a scrape than it is a hit.
Yeah. Even scraping, hitting, rubbing, blowing did nothing. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
You've got to remove some of the material off of it first as well before it'll start going. And you also have to make sure that the edge that you're scraping it with is a sharp edge. And I don't mean the sharp blade of your knife, but it needs to be like a 90-degree angle. It's got to have enough dig to it.
Okay, cool. I know what to look for. That's the main thing.
It's Happy New Year, Don.
Lemben Zünden, apparently. Bushcraft fire steel with handle.
Yeah, this bushcraft title has gotten out of control, in my opinion. This is such a buzzword. However, perhaps it's good to have a name to call things by.
Yeah. Have you seen Primitive Technology at all, the YouTube channel?
Oh, it's one of my favorites. Yes, I love to watch him. It's great.
I get the feeling like he's gone, you know, every person with all their camping kit and stuff. If you just look at this guy, you go, okay.
Well, part of the problem is we miss the part where it takes him hours to do all of that.
Yeah, but he does show it. He does edit it beautifully where you're seeing, oh, it's taken him 5 minutes to make that pot. And then he cuts to 15, and my mind just goes, oh my God, has this guy no life?
Hey, I mean, some people do weird stuff on the weekend. He's just added to it, I'm sure. I'm relatively certain he's just a normal person with a normal job and so forth.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Says they who are on the 24-hour podcast marathon.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm currently shirking work responsibilities to be here. It's more fun to hang out on Mumble than it is to write code for contract.
Indeed it is. You're working today? Are you working today?
Yeah, unfortunately, toward the end of the year. So I have a full-time job. I work for Malwarebytes as a programmer, and I have a business on the side where I do programming, pen testing, and network stuff. And I had a crazy rush for the end of the year for Malwarebytes, and I got most of that done. I'll finish it up on Tuesday. But I have Monday and Tuesday off from Malwarebytes, so I'm spending the weekend and those 2 days wrapping up some client code and also some lodge work. I've been elected secretary again, and I've been handed a mess. So yeah, lots of work.
Good luck with that.
Hey, thanks. Actually, the secretary stuff goes really easy because it's a paper instead of digital, so I just have to manage a whole bunch of piles of paper.
So the show's transcoded. I just need to talk to Dave now, and then I'm done.
He will be happy.
RWA, Netminer, anyone else in here? Haha, and Kevin Wisher's problem is fixed.
RWA back.
Welcome back.
Hi, welcome back.
I had to get some sleep.
What times are there now?
11:32 Eastern Time. USA.
Yeah, figured. Okay, I need to finish off some stuff and go do family stuff now, shall we?
I'll be hanging out for a bit before I take off for a while, and then I'll come back in after that.
Truncate silence will take out the rest. I just stopped and restarted the stream there, recording on my side at 16:36 UTC.
Are you the only one recording right now?
There are a few now, yes. And I'm also recording the stream itself. So,
okay.
But no harm to press that magic button.
Right, I'm on my phone at the moment, but I could...
There's 5 different recordings going, so we're okay.
Okay, if you need another one, I'll hop on the computer instead of the phone and record.
No, it's okay.
Well, gentlemen, my back is telling me that I need to attend to it, so I hope to be back later.
Talk to you later.
Yep, and take care.
Happy New Year, everyone, whenever it comes to you.
And welcome back, Mr. Worley.
Thank you. Scanning books is more boring than ironing. It's a fact.
Did you say scanning books?
Yep.
You're just building a digital library or what?
No, I did a show on this about scanning books for my son because don't want him lugging in the stuff each and every day, so he can leave his books in school and then you have the digital copy here to go through with him if he needs it.
Oh, right. I recall that. Yeah.
So I have done the workbook. I've done the actual study books and now I'm doing the workbooks. So, but it's boring.
This sounds very exciting indeed.
The thing about it is it needs just enough attention that it's not you can't do, it's not like ironing that you can just let one part of your brain do it. You need to actively be active enough, and it's just not active enough that keeps you interested.
How long per page does it typically take?
It only takes a few seconds, but then you have to change it. So in this case, I started at 1456 CET, and I went straight through basically without stopping to 1644. So it took 15, so an hour, 2 hours to do a book without a break.
Get one of those scanners with a feed hopper and then shear the spine off of the book.
Yes, school wouldn't be too happy with that. The thought had crossed my mind indeed.
Well, you're a good man doing that for him.
I have to check each of them to make sure they're in order, and then I can do the rest. Page 41, 42, 43, 44. Oh, missed one. Yeah, 45. Missed page 45. And it's amazing. It's an amazingly complex problem, turning over pages. There's a lot of tools that a lot of people have had projects trying to solve that problem.
That seems simple on the surface, but I imagine it's a little unwieldy.
Yeah, it's so much so that the archive.org have settled on like a V-shape, two Canon cameras pointing each direction on a V-shaped thing of glass, and they have, you put the book in at 45 degrees, and the glass, you pull down like, you know, one of those industrial dishwashers, the glass fits in between the two, and then it takes two Canon, two photos with two professional Canon SLR cameras. And then somebody lifts it up and changes it. So they found it just easier to ask volunteers to help.
Yeah, I think at this point it's probably a chiefly human task.
And maybe that will answer our question from earlier. What will we do when all the robot jobs have been automated? We'll be scanning.
We'll scan books. Books.
Another one, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62. No, didn't. Cool, that one's done. Excellent.
Oh goodness, I'm dealing with the most frustrating API at the moment. This thing does not give out proper responses at all. Undocumented APIs are one of the exquisite pleasures of some of my work, because I basically have to spelunk several endpoints to figure out what I'm doing.
Yeah, and even those that are not necessarily, just because it's documented doesn't mean it's been implemented.
Oh, that's absolutely true, which is why I typically try to make sure that I keep my documentation up to date, even though I hate the process.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I'm not going to process that now. I'm just going to leave it scanned, and then I can process it at some other point. Okay, I'll talk to you guys later. I need to go do some stuff now.
Take care, Ken. Good talking with you.
Yeah, great talking to you.
I need to get some sleep. I'll be back on later.
Sleep well. Good to hear from you, Knapp. I'll be back and forth all day as well.
What was that just now, the mute mumble thing? What was that?
The text-to-speech bit? That's somebody in chat.
Oh, was that somebody actually in the chat?
Yeah, I believe by default it will do text-to-speech on anybody chatting.
Oh, okay. It was then like it came back to my phone. It's from somebody on the chat. Okay.
Hey guys, Knapp here. Happy New Year.
Not yet here, but yeah.
No, not yet here either. It's like 11:51 a.m. where I am, Quebec.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right, 11:51 a.m.
4:51 p.m. Okay, I would have been on this earlier actually, but I've had certain setup problems with my devices and stuff. Ugh. I've been in the world of Windows the last few days because I've had my laptop back recently. New motherboard in it, new hard disk. Back to Windows 8.1, so I had to upgrade to 10, which was of course a hassle in itself. Doing the updates. A Windows 10 that didn't load up for a bit properly, blue screen, you know, the blue screen even. And then I'm like, yay, I'm on the Linux stage, or so I thought last night. And then guess what happened?
You weren't.
What?
You say what?
Yes, what?
I basically got a ISO downloaded for Ubuntu 16.04 free, because I'm going to put a few district stuff on there. But burnt onto USB stick with the etcher. Seems to work, but then it's having problems loading up the USB stick. I get grub up and then it goes back screen. So I did it with unit boot in, or whatever it's called as well, and with different USB stick today, and it's basically not loading up. I don't know why. When it should be loading up, I'm getting a black screen instead. And I get grub, but after that.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's just, because I used to have that on here. Well, I used to have an Ubuntu 16.04 on the laptop, so I don't know if it's, maybe it's a problem with the ISO, who knows these days, especially when you hear the news about 17.10 and Lenovo. I mean, that's on the Ubuntu website itself still when I last looked.
I have a Lenovo P580, Linux Mint 17.21, highly customized. I've had it just the way I like it for the last 3 years, and I'm dreading the day I have to jump to another distro or go to the latest Linux Mint Mate, because I like the way I got it set up now.
Yeah, but there was a bug in the Linux 4.3 kernel that basically stops, that basically corrupts the BIOS on some of the laptops. Lenovo wants to see, I think, as well, and what's still on the, so they made the ISO not be downloadable on the Ubuntu website itself with the message. Obviously, you can download it elsewhere still, but that's not very good, is it?
No. In fact, one of the hinges on my laptop is broken, and so it's permanently open. I'm using it as a regular desktop computer now, and I'm contemplating what computer am I going to get next to be my desktop computer.
Right, well, I got this HP laptop I've got specifically fixed again, because it's got touchscreen. It used to work okay enough when it actually worked with Linux and so on as well, although it did overheat from the beginning. That was really HP's fault, but it's, you know, it's, I had to pay to get that fixed, annoyingly still. But I got that laptop fixed. It works so nicely with the UEFI, or it should do, but I've just said I've had a problem booting up Ubuntu properly from a USB. I don't know if that's related to anything, but anyway.
I remember when I put Linux Mint on this laptop, I just went into the BIOS, turned off UEFI. I didn't want to deal with all that.
Have you got a TV on in the background or something?
Yeah, I'm visiting my sister, and she's watching some movie on Amazon called Margaret and Carmen.
That's I don't know about your country, but in UK that could be 10 years under. I mean, you're not meant to record stuff off the TV, they say, in the cinema, so I'm from the, my joke didn't come out right, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I know, so I have to go upstairs.
Is it only us? Is it only us now? People disappeared.
No, I'm still here. I'm just busily coding away.
Oh, right, okay.
Trying to knock these features out before I have to have a deadline.
I've never used Plumble before. This is the first time actually using Plumble, the app for Android, for Mumble.
It's quite nice. It's what I'm using at the moment.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't get into this channel. Ken put me in, but I couldn't seem to drag myself in. So there was I don't know what caused that, but yeah. Oh, and instead of using Windows for this, because I remember doing that in the past when I was setting up a laptop as well, because of whatever, you know, I've had to not use Windows at all in that sense. But there you go. Although I did put specifically what phone I'm using at the moment, because that's meant to be a good phone, a good Android phone as well. And I would say the Sony implementation of the Xperia X is quite good. However, I have to actually, I bought it at full price, not on the contract, you know, and I bought to do a specific purpose with this phone. And
I've got to go ahead with that, really. Otherwise, I've just defeated the point of buying this phone. And any idea what my specific purpose is for this particular phone?
Recording HPR episodes?
No. Seriously, I've got to reflash it. That's a hint. But what am I going to reflash it with is the question.
That is a good question. I have no idea. What are you going to use?
You're from America, aren't you? So you may, I don't know if you've heard of this one, actually. Obviously, Ubuntu Touch got a lot of, enough hype, but that's only under UB ports. It's not that. Firefox OS is obviously long gone now as well. But there is one alternative Linux player left, really. Mobile player. They nearly went bankrupt as a company because of an investor problem, but they are still around doing the software and getting hardware deals elsewhere now, or sort of thing. But do you know what I'm talking about?
It's not Symbian, is it?
No, but no, that's gone as well. But you would be, well, you're kind of close. I'd say Nokia is a sort of hint as well, but not really. Well, it kind of is. I'll say Nokia is a sort of hint, but.
Well, it's not Osmocom because that's not Linux. I'm not sure.
But you're from America, aren't you? So that could be why.
Yep, I certainly am.
Have you heard of, see if I can say these things right. I might say this is a bit wrong, but we'll see. YOLA or YOLA and Sailfish or Sailfish?
Yeah, Sailfish was my next guess. I should have jumped on that one first when you kept saying I was American.
Yeah, well, at least at places like Fosdem, it seems to be not that big a deal if you got a YOLA phone these days in Brussels, but that's there. But I think it's more popular on the mainland, so not here in the UK. But I did have a YOLA phone, so which was all right. But it's okay. But the operating system can probably do more than Android, to be fair. Because it can also run most Android apps. When I last tried on the YOLA phone, it ran pretty much every Android app that I put on it okay enough. When I put its own native app on, though, I got into a problem, but that's because I hadn't upgraded to the latest version of the operating system. But yeah.
Yeah, I had great interest in that, but never could find a phone that would do it. And I was also afraid that the project had kind of died. I know they had some disagreements, but it's good to know that it's still available.
Oh yeah, you can put, well, yeah, the tablet, a few people got it. I got half refund, as did most people. My second part, see what I do. I get some refund, they're trying to sell me the Sony Xperia, Sailfish OS for Sony Xperia X is one of the options. This is how you can spend part of your refund if you want. So I need to get that paid for, really, under something. I think I might just miss that one on a discount for that, actually, slightly, but never mind. Because they're still selling it as an operating system, which makes sense, because they're not doing hardware anymore. So they still have to, their company have to make some money, don't they? So I think that's fine. And also, actually, it's not completely open source, but because the interface isn't, apparently, but I don't think that matters that much because it's mostly open source otherwise. And it's actually quite good. It can run Android apps, it can run some of their own native apps, and the operating system itself is quite nice, actually.
I typically run only free software where I can, but I don't believe that phones are a place where you can do that. I was using Replicant for a while, and now I'm using Lineage simply because the phone I had running Replicant took a swim, and I couldn't find another one. So the phone that I had given to me after that, I try not to buy these things on contract if I can avoid it, but it would not run Replicant, so I'm running Lineage. However, I can imagine going into a contract for something like Sailfish would be a good plan. It seems like a solid operating system.
Oh, well, that won't go on the contract, I don't think, because not anytime soon, because of how the market generally is like. However, We were talking about sort of open source. Well, you just mentioned open source phones. You probably mean privacy, more privacy respecting, ideally as well. Did you hear of the Libra M that they were crowdfunding in the last sort of 3 months or so? They got like $2 million something. So it got in the end, so it's got a lot of money. Quite an expensive phone, but I still want one of those as well. But no one's going to get until 2019 anyway, by the earliest. So.
Yeah, I'm glad that there's, pardon the noise, I'm starting some tea here, but I'm glad that there's a community around, or several communities around building a more privacy-enabled phone, but I think the biggest issue is the baseband. Of course, it all comes back to your threat model, right? I'm not too worried about state actors because I feel like I'm already screwed there anyway, but the baseband having being totally opaque is a problem because if there are any backdoors there, once one of those backdoors becomes semi-public knowledge and is out of state control, then everybody's phones are compromised and it's just a bad situation. But that's why I'm glad that those communities are there. And yes, the phones are awfully expensive and will take a long time to build, but hopefully it'll be the foundation for some new options. I don't know how likely it is in the age of rampant capitalism that those options will come to light, but the markets will tell us if that's what people want or not. And in the meantime, I will save my pennies and buy one when I can.
I think, well, actually, I really like the UB Pulse message. It's a little map, the Ubuntu Touch community fork. Because obviously Comical dropped that, but the community carry on. But they have a nice little app that basically talks about what a UB Ports is, and it's like, and it's also on the website somewhere, the same text really. But it's like, okay, we can't really compete against Android and iPhone because the market is how it is, but it doesn't really matter now because we are community operating system. We are community who are carrying on with something like that. And I think that's basically it. There's a community that can carry on. Apparently Mark wanted to carry it on actually in Conical, but the board didn't. But I'm just gonna say apparently to that. So but it doesn't really matter so much. But it is a shame that one failed in that sense. It didn't really take off a bit more. But one debate was that it wouldn't run Android apps anyway, and it had to do that. And I know obviously Samsung has Tizen as well, they can do that, but I'm not going to just release all the devices with Tizen. These are niche OSs, but like maybe that's just how it is when you think about it, because I've been thinking about it recently, and actually there's a lot of people with iPhones, for example, they're not particularly technical people, but they're all over the place, these people, and they really like the iPhones, and they probably like the iPhone because, or an iPad possibly if they got that, because you know it works quite well really, and or compared to say Windows, you know, it works better, doesn't it? So, and they probably know that deep down, a lot of these people, that Windows is not that good, and that's probably also why Windows Phone sort of failed. Now Microsoft has given up on it. We will not have, yeah, they're not going to do Windows phones anymore. They're only going to provide apps for Android and I think iOS. I think maybe deep down a lot of people who aren't technical also know that Windows is not very good. It crashes, it reboots, it's not particularly stable, it's not that reliable, and that's maybe why iPhone is more popular than Android and even Chromebooks, I suppose, to some extent, because that's in the shop. But it has to be companies selling this stuff, otherwise they're not going to just get it either. That's the difference between them and us. We know about things, we will pull it on, we will buy device specifically, the public will not.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. And even though those people, those discussions like at Ubuntu were shot down, the ideas were shot down, at least the discussions were had. And I think those discussions can be remembered in future projects, and they can also influence future decisions. So it's a good thing that they were had. On that note, I'm going to have to step away for probably about 10 minutes or so to make some food. I'll be back shortly. Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah. Is anybody else here, actually, or not? Right, I guess not then, because I was thinking of going out for a little bit and then coming back anyways and stuff like that, so, yeah. I'm talking to myself, am I?
Well, there's a couple of people here.
What, one person's left as a person, or is that it?
I'm still around, but I'll be back and forth all day, so if you gotta go out, cheers, man, I'll see you later.
No, I'll be back in a bit myself.
Yeah, this is Bongo. Yeah, I've just been sitting here listening.
Unless we get into a really good chat, and then I'll go out a little bit later. It's only very near. Actually, I have 10 o'clock until where I want, for where I want to go, it's at. And that's a little shot before it closes, because it's a new year. Another 5 hours, in other words, or just about. Am I really echoey now? Well, not, by the way. Or back loop, or whatever it is. Okay, yeah, back in about 20 minutes then, if anybody's actually listening to me. Half an hour though.
Of course, I just missed Claudio M.
Hey guys, anybody talking out there, or am I just not hearing you?
We're here. Some just go and come, like I do. Not much to say this year.
Yeah, it's a bit quiet at the moment, but I'll be back in about half an hour, and then I guess I'll have a chat, proper chat, if somebody's here.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious, because I just grabbed my laptop, and I'm mobile with it, as opposed to being plugged into the microphone. Didn't know if it was configured right.
Yeah, it doesn't really help when it's quiet.
It helps sound all right.
Yeah, it doesn't really help when it's quiet room, but anyway, yeah, give me about half an hour or so, and I'll be back, so yeah.
Has anybody heard from Klaatu in a while? Because
signed off about an hour ago or so.
Okay, because he's in Australia, right?
New Zealand, I think.
Hey, but to us in North America here, it's the same thing, right?
To you, it is. You tell them that, they'll go crazy.
But that's my job.
I know, Rich. I don't know if you're crazy or you just like to mess. Make people make trouble.
Well, if I was really industrious, I would go through all of the Tilts episodes of 2017 and cut together all the times I made Joel curse or scream or something.
No, we don't want to hear that again. About a month ago is when you really went off. I think you made Dan mad.
Here's the thing. My goal is never to make anybody angry. I did that on Facebook. Some guy just lost. I think the other thing is, it's very funny. Somebody many years ago gave me a mug that said, I refuse to have battle of wits with an unarmed opponent. And, Dan, I of course consider a well-armed opponent. But some random person on Facebook just lost their mind. And I was like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't go at it with somebody I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know how they are. But Dan was well equipped that night, though. He knew what he was talking about.
Well, I don't want to stir that whole topic up again, but in fact, if I was not going to stir that whole topic up again, I wouldn't make any further comment.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing about seasoned discourse. I think that's the trouble with America today. People don't want to talk. Even if it makes you mad, at least talk and get your feelings out there. But people don't want to do that anymore.
All right. Wait, RWA, you're Russ, right?
Well, Reg.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you watch Ladder with Crowder, but he has paid content and YouTube content. And on YouTube, he's doing... Like, he goes to a college campus, sets up a table, he has microphones and, GoPros and stuff like that. And he says, hey, here's the topic, change my mind. Whether it's Second Amendment, abortion or whatever, or, there's only two genders, change my mind. And the idea is to have a reasoned discussion with people. And I think it's polite, but I don't know if it achieves anything. Maybe a third party watching it going on will come to a conclusion based on it. But I don't know if the people that he's engaging actually have a change of heart or anything.
I haven't seen any of those, but I've heard people talking about it. As long as you can talk about anything. As long as you're talking, that's half the battle right there. But here in the U.S., we don't want to even talk, you know. If you don't like my opinion, they just cut you off. And when I went to college back in the late 70s, you know, college was the open ground. You could talk about anything. Now you can't do that at college anymore. They shut you down. So, and it doesn't matter if you're liberal or conservative or whatever. They don't want to hear it. And so there's no discussion, no opinions. Everybody supposedly has one opinion, but that's not how life is. Everybody has an opinion about something. And when everybody's talking about the same thing with the same opinions, nothing can get done.
Well, and that's the thing. We could talk about, there's simple topics, and then there's more complex topics. And, I don't know how many are too simple, but I was going to say something like net neutrality that went through. There's things I liked and things I disliked, but there was more I disliked in the government net neutrality. But one of the things that I would like is, I think I explained this on Tilts, is I think of the internet as the gas in my car, and the gas shouldn't be telling me where I can go or what I can do. Likewise, with Comcast, they shouldn't be throttling my Netflix unless Netflix pays more. That's bullcrap.
Yep, I agree with you. I'm on Comcast now, but I went through that with Cox Cable early this year. I became a cord cutter because this time last year, I think about leaving Cox, and can you re-up me for the next year without an increase? And every time I tried last year, this time, they kept saying, no, we can't re-up you. You're going to have to pay $150 and blah, blah, blah. And so I just went crazy and just canceled my Cox and just went with the internet. And in my town at that time, you either had Cox or you didn't have nobody to get on the internet. So I was stuck. And it seemed like, you know, every time they could stick it to me, they stuck it to me. So now I'm with Comcast in Atlanta, Georgia. And they're better than Cox to me right now.
Yeah, I see that's a problem. I don't know if they put me on some sort of intro service or whatever. I got to have a double play because otherwise if I get internet only, it costs more than if I get a double play or triple play. And, you know, the other part of that is, you know, a layer of abstraction. I have Vonage, and the Vonage works on any, you know, internet provider. So if I had Comcast for my home phone, which nobody uses, then if I go somewhere else, then it's a big hassle changing the number. But realistically, with Vonage, I just plug it in somewhere else.
Yep, I know what you mean. Last year this time, I had the Cox Cable bundle that I had for about 10 years. You pay $100 a month for phone, internet, and television. Never used the telephone, ended up unplugging the telephone, but I used the internet and I watched TV via the cable. I didn't have the big cable package with 200 channels. I just had the regular cable, you know, you watch USA and AMC and all that. But when I went to re-up, they sure did not want me to keep paying what I was paying. They wanted $150 a month, and I wasn't willing to do that, and they didn't want to talk about it. So I don't know what was their problem that week, but I ended up going straight cordless. I mean, you know, without the TV, I kept the internet, and it was an experience. I even did a podcast about my troubles with Cox Cable, but it was a nice experience, and I'm glad I did cut cable. But then I moved a month ago to Atlanta, Georgia, and I got Comcast. They gave me one of them deals again, so it was cheaper to go with the all-in bundle than just without the internet. So that's where I'm at now. We'll see next year when they want me to re-up.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I got to put the cable in my daughter's name so I can get some sort of discount next time. Like, we just keep changing names on the cable account.
Oh, yeah, get the little education plan going.
Yeah, something. I it, Sirius, I just want, oh, and Comcast, they, I think they have the, you throttled, I'm sorry, after a terabyte a month, they start charging you. So I guess we watched a lot of video this month.
Yeah, that's how Cox was. They converted everybody last year, October this time, they gave everybody a terabyte. I came close a few times with the terabyte, but they said the first 2 months, if you went over terabyte limit, they would not charge you, and then after that it
right.
was $10 every 100 gigabytes or something, I don't know, but I think Comcast has the same thing, but
yep. yeah,
this month I think I came up to about 880 in the gigabytes, so you know.
Yeah, we got an email.
But I stream all day, all night. I'm retired. I do what I need to do, and if I need to, if I go over 1 month, then I'll go over. But I'm thinking that with all this net neutrality and everything, somebody needs to have an unlimited plan where you can pay a decent amount of money and get what you want with no throttling and no extra charges or anything. I'd be up for that, but.
So, and again, here's my opinion on this is I don't pay Comcast because I like Comcast. I pay Comcast for internet service because I want YouTube, Netflix, Amazon Video, whatever else I may be doing, you know, or to remotely control my home or VPN into my home, those kinds of things. I'm not paying them for them. I'm paying them for these other things. And if they, you know, FUBAR these other things, then I don't need them. Then I'm mad at them. And I think that's where Netflix went wrong. When Comcast put the gun in their chest, they should have said, hey, you know what? Throttle us and see what kind of complaints you get.
Yeah, but Netflix didn't do that. They just said, we'll pay you. And that's what they did. I started having trouble with Netflix on my Cox cable. I'd start a video and about 2 minutes in, just past the credits, the video would stop. And I would have to reboot my Roku to watch Netflix. And I ended up starting watching more Amazon and Hulu than I did Netflix. I kept Netflix, but for a while there, I had all kinds of trouble with Netflix. I don't know if Cox was throttling them or not, but now, since I'm on Comcast, I don't have any problem with anybody. I don't know what the deal is.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, was it the Roku? Was it the firmware? Was there a firmware update?
Like you said, and when you start messing with that, then you got a problem.
So in town here, there's a place called Harborside. They're doing a New Year's thing, and I think it's free, and they're going to show the ball drop. And my daughter just chimed in, it's free, but there were some hotels in that small, there's shops and stuff like that. So there's a party at the hotel also, but they have an amphitheater there on the Intercoastal, and they're going to show a big screen with the ball drop. So we're going to go to that tonight. And last week, we've had days into the 80s, and today it's like 66 degrees right now.
I'd love to have some 66. It's in low 30s and upper 20s this whole week. I'm in Atlanta, so you know we had the snow the other week. They were talking about it this week, but it didn't come through. It just ended up being very, very cold. And so that's what we're dealing with. We have a peach drop in underground Atlanta. I don't plan on going to that because it's going to be cold as Dickens.
Hold on, my daughter's talking to me.
Okay.
So the place we want to go to, they say, you know, the activities start at 9 p.m. They're going to have a band and whatever. And I'm like, heck, I don't want to stand around for 3 hours. In fact, I'd rather get there at 11 o'clock, you know, like, you know, maybe 10:30 or so I don't have to stand around. And my daughter's like, we ought to get there early because there may be issues parking. But they got a couple of parking garages there and stuff. So I don't know.
Well, you get there early, you will stand around. You get there late, you might not be near the ball drop. That's the problem. I just plan on staying home. I'll drink me some Jack Daniels or some cup of scotch tonight and ring in the Happy New Year.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm usually all in for that. I don't like traveling on New Year's Eve. That's not my forte.
Yep. And especially around here, all the Georgia State Patrol and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation will be out with their DUI checkpoint. So stay home. I could ride the subway if I wanted to, but
I didn't know there was a subway in Atlanta.
What about Atlanta?
I didn't know there was a subway in Atlanta.
Yep, it's called MARTA. It's the Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit System. They have combination subway and bus system. You might end up coming off the subway and catching a bus, or you might catch a bus and end up getting on a subway. Depends on where you're going.
So there's fireworks. My daughter said there was 8,000 people at this event last year, so I don't know. My wife, I guess she's been sick for about a week, so I think she just wants to get out. So she's like, yeah, let's go to this thing.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, yeah, I'm looking outside. It's pretty out, but it's, you know, 66 degrees. Like you said, you'd kill for 60 degrees.
Yep, it's 34 degrees here in Dunwoody, Georgia, suburb of Atlanta.
Wondering if the pool water's warmer than the outside.
Oh, be quiet. Quiet.
I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, I'm in and out too. I'm going silent for a while.
Are you here, Mr. Jackson?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, cabin fever's in 2 weeks.
That seems a lot sooner than normal. Probably not.
It's the 12th and 13th that weekend.
I'll have to let you know.
Just put it out there, man.
Yeah, I keep forgetting to even check for it, so.
I figured.
Hello. Is there anybody out there?
Come on.
mugger. Oh yeah.
There he is.
There he is.
All right.
Yes, that's, I just came back for a bit, and what do I hear? I get to hear that. So I'm that's what we need, more music on the, podcast. You might not be Jolly Bacon or something like that, but it doesn't matter. More guitar. It is. It should be. Casper.
Yes! Yes! I was just transmitting some frequencies to everybody. We're now, let's do math. Oh, geez.
We are now
8 hours into the Hacker Public Radio live stream. Oh.
1 + 1 = 3. 3 + 2 = 7. You win the award at maths. Congratulations.
What do I win?
You get to teach 5-year-old maths for a week. That's your award.
No. We like to prey on greys. But thank you for letting me know that everything's working. Yes. All right. I'm glad that. Oh, we've got Gordon. We've got Nefford. If you're just tuning in, this is Hacker Public Radio at 8 hours and 18 minutes live. Come on, somebody help me out. Let me know we're still going. Let me know this is still happening. Anyone? Come on.
Can you hear the machine?
Yes. And we will rage against it.
I was just enjoying it so much. I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, I was hoping somebody would stop me, please. We're having some good conversations earlier. Having some checks, cross checks. Ken was with us some time ago, and I had to check out. For anyone just joining us, this is Hacker Public Radio. I'm going to put a link to the Etherpad. Everybody, if you could take notes as you go on, that'd be greatly appreciated.
It's so colorful. Turn that off.
Yeah, so NE4, how do you pronounce?
Sorry, I'm set up for my ham radio stuff, so that's actually my call sign. Name here's Bill.
Oh, so you are also a ham?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. That's yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, I do the Linux and the Ham Shack podcast with Russ.
Oh, great. That was one of the transmissions we picked up from above the Van Allen belt, and we enjoyed it quite a bit.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I sent away for one of those starter kits or something to get my noob license.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I either didn't get it or it became a part of the mountain of mail. and then, you know, maybe it, I mean, I don't even know what
I'm expecting. It must have been a while ago because I don't remember doing starter kits. But I've only been with the show for about a year and a half now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's well longer than aliens have been with the podcast.
But yeah. Yeah, just listening in here, I was doing some work and caught the stream, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I have it set up to even connect here in the office, and of course I do. It's too cold in the garage right now for me to go out there where I actually do most of my recording. It's like negative 10 outside or something stupid.
Something stupid.
Where are you that's negative 10?
Billings, Montana.
That would be it.
Yeah, it might be warmer now. Let's see. Oh, nope, minus 10 still. There you go.
Yeah, so are you up to the level of hammedness where you can transmit GIFs? Etc.
Anybody can do that. What are you talking about? Slow scan TV? Yeah. Yeah. I've been a ham for 20 some odd years. And I have my extra license.
Extra license. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So tell us, give us a little rundown, a little disorientation as to how you go about getting a license, how that goes. I know there's a website you go to. If you put that in the notes, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, so basically, I mean, in order to get started, there's three license types or three license classes that you can get. And the first one is a technician license, and you can get study guides. You can get them for free online. It's basically a question pool. Memorize the question and the answer, and you can go take the. I think it's like a 35 question test or something close to that, 35 or 50 questions. I haven't taken a test for like that in a while. But there's tons of guides online. I think KB6NU has some easy ham study guides that are really helpful for some hams, and there's also. There's the WB6NOA, Gordon West, he has his study guides and stuff like that. If you want to buy a printed guide, those would probably be the best options. Or look up for a local club in your town. Most clubs, most towns have small groups of clubs that run like either repeaters or, classes or testing sessions. And they can definitely get anyone interested in ham radio set up to get a test and get on the air for the first time and kind of get them on their way to doing whatever they would like to do in the ham radio hobby, whether that be emergency services or, sending GIFs, whatever you want on the radio. And, definitely point you to the right class of license that you need in order to accomplish what you want to do with it.
Thank you.
So this is probably going to come off as a stupid question, but what, as a ham, what do you do?
Well, it's a hobby. So what do? I just screw around on the radio. That's basically all I do. you could do whatever you want to do. It's just an interesting hobby. A lot of people, in the early days used to get into it just for experimenting and, it was a progression from CB. And, it's kind of evolved over the years. where a lot of your entry level hams these days are more interested in, you know, doing some, you know, emergency communications, whether that be, you know, running radios at a walkathon, or, you know, helping with, you know, a natural disaster like fires and hurricanes and what have you. And then other ones just, you know, kind of mess around with the various new technologies like digital modes. They have a bunch of new they're always coming out with new digital modes, digital voice, digital digital texting across the airwaves, and then experimenting with low power homemade antennas. A lot of people are hams in the cities, and you know, you can't put up monster towers and beams and, you know, big wire antennas. So, you know, we have a lot of people that experiment with low power, small antenna design. So you can have like a stealth setup and still be able to operate around the world. And there's just so many aspects of the hobby. I mean, everybody always wonders, is like, you know, what do you do it for? Well, everybody does it for something different. That's the kind of cool part about the hobby. There's so many different aspects of the hobby that it doesn't really have a single purpose or direction, which is interesting.
See, it always seemed very fascinating to me, and all the technology around it seems really, really cool. I can never, and this is definitely a me thing, and I would definitely don't want to put down the hobby in any way, shape, or form. I could never come up with any sort of thing to do with it. I mean, I can, you know, go out, buy all the equipment, get myself certified, and then after that, I'm not sure what I would do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's common too. I mean, some people get into it not really knowing what they want. I mean, what really drew me into the hobby, you know, 20 years ago was sort of contesting. I kind of saw this aspect of the radio where it was more of a sport and kind of high-paced, fast-paced, setting up a station out in the middle of nowhere, camping, which is something I enjoy doing, and then, you know, basically trying to get as many contacts as possible within a certain amount of time and capture all the information, you know, into your log properly by logging their correct call signs and stuff like that. And that's really what drew me to the hobby, and I still kind of tinker around with that today. I don't really have as much time as I used to have to do that stuff, but yeah, so that's kind of what hooked me, and I kind of geared my entire station and everything else for that. And I mean, if you don't see anything of value in the hobby that you could, you know, enjoy yourself, then yeah, it's definitely not for you. Don't do it just because somebody else is doing it.
Well, I only say it because all the technology around the ham radio stuff seems really cool, and it seems really interesting. But I can't get myself to that next step of I have all of it, I can get all this stuff to work, and then what? But I definitely, like I said, I don't ever want to put it down, because it definitely seems like a really, really cool hobby.
Yeah. I mean, it falls into the, you know, I guess the, you see more of the makers and stuff like that getting involved in it nowadays with, you know, integrating Raspberry Pi with telemetry units, and all of a sudden they're like, well, I want something that transmits further than the ISM band, little, you know, 900 megahertz and stuff devices that are used for medical. And, you know, so that can tick those people into getting, you know, the entry level license, which allows them all those VHF and high frequency, or the VHF and UHF frequencies that they can put a little bit higher power, you know, telemetry beacons and stuff like that on their little, their projects, their IoT devices that are maybe not necessarily connected to the internet. So, I mean, it's a transitional thing. It's a, you know, the hobby's more of kind of, it comes on the edges of other hobbies. I think for the most part, the older guys that got into the hobby for contesting or, you know, tube rigs or something like that, they're probably involved in other aspects of the hobby and not necessarily experimenting. Although I know tons and tons of guys that have been in the hobby for a long time that are, you know, experimenting with, you know, various Raspberry Pi devices, trying to build a better, smaller, you know, little Linux box that can do all their little communications and run their FT8 and all these digital modes and stuff like that. So, it's just Yeah, it fits weirdly in society today, for sure. It's definitely has multiple entry points and multiple uses, but you really gotta want one of these, you know, extra ticks, you know, in order to get involved in the hobby today. You know, like the RC guys used to get into it for like high-powered RC remotes, and I knew several people up here in Billings that basically that's all they got their license for, was so they could have a high-powered RC remote. They could care less about the whole talking and learning everything else, and you only needed an entry-level license for that.
Yeah, I haven't talked to anybody in years.
Yeah,
that needs to change. We need to get the broadcast out. We need to get John KT 4KB out there, out on the street with the hams.
I've contacted in the last, let's say the last year, probably 3,000 people, but not with my voice. I get tongue-tied, so I've talked to, you know, communicated with so many people. I do the weird stuff. I bounce signals off of meteorites and a couple other weird things like that.
Have you detected our transmissions from above the Van Allen belt?
Well, I'll put it to this way. I have proved to myself with my own equipment the Flat Earth Society is incorrect.
10-4. We aliens can see the blue marble fall from above, and we see that there's no truth to the shilling conspiracy. It's just another attempt to discredit the real news.
Well, there's two things that go into this. You know, one is if the Earth was flat, by now cats would have knocked everything off of it. So I think that's proof enough.
Yeah.
and then that one guy with the rocket launcher RV motorhome conversion, and that was going to fly a rocket manned by himself to 1,800 feet, not 1.8 miles, but 1,800 feet, was going to prove whether the Earth was round or not. I mean, you get a tall ladder, you can go up 1,800 feet. You don't need to get yourself on top of explosives to do that.
No. And Hacker Public Radio, I don't believe, would condone the use of explosives upon yourself to get you to great heights. That's not necessary. we don't need any real live rocket jumping.
Well, I think Wile E. Coyote figured that out, right?
We would hope so. We would hope people would learn that lesson from a young age.
I don't think Wile E. Coyote ever learned that lesson.
Oh. See, that's the kind of stuff you need to transmit. You need to get it out there.
So where's Fitty One Fitty?
In the nitty gritty, down by the city. Such pity.
Come on, it's got to be noon by him. He's got to be up by now.
One would hope, but we're not here. We're not there. We're everywhere.
I don't know. The last couple of years, he came on early on in the morning and then left for a while on errands and then came back on later at night, but I haven't heard from it at all.
So does anybody have plans for tonight? You're going out, doing something, staying in?
Had a great New Year's Eve so far with everybody on the Hacker Public Radio channel. I'll tell you that much.
Why do you have any wild, crazy plans?
There's a shopping center called Harborside in Palm Beach here, so they're going to have, they have an amphitheater, and they're going to have a big screen TV, show the ball drop, and fireworks. And it fits my budget. It's free.
That sounds nice.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, unfortunately for us Floridians, right now, I don't know, it's going to be in the 60s when that happens. So we're all, you know, going to put on our Arctic gear, you know, like ski boots, survival suits, those kinds of things.
Cool.
It's so funny. What was I wearing yesterday? I probably just walked around flip-flops, long pants, and a t-shirt. And there are people with, like, ski jackets on.
Must be in South Florida.
You guys, man. You know, the second it gets below 70 here, people, they got scarves and mittens, and I'm like, really?
Well, you know, it's the humidity. It makes it a very cold, wet coldness.
Keep telling yourself that.
And I lived in Florida for like 30 years. I'm used to those people.
Ouch. Digging on Florida.
Yeah, my parents still live there, and yeah, they would never come up here. It's so darn cold. They're like, no. When it gets 40 in Florida, they freak out.
Yeah, I'm ready to leave the heat of South Carolina, but the job won't let me.
Well, you got to tell the job that they need to give John some more flexibility so he can spread his wings and fly.
Well, I believe they want to get rid of us, so, oh well.
They do want to get rid of us, but that's why we're here on Hacker Public Radio, to discuss communications, ways of flexing, ways of adapting to the robots taking... How are we going to adapt and change? How are we going to adapt so that robots don't take all of our jobs? Once we've done all this fine programming and programmed all these robots to do every conceivable thing we can think of, if they don't enslave us, how do we continue on?
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.